And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here tonight on the big broadcast. We are in Madison, Wisconsin. What I'm saying is the first battle in the class war, the front lines, if you will. This is where the battle has taken us. Amazing day today. We're going to be talking with a bunch of people who were at the event today. Thousands of people into the streets on a bitter cold, snowy, icy day here in Madison, Wisconsin. And you know, the story is all the same from everybody that we talk to. We don't want our rights taken away. The mainstream corporate controlled blame media. They're trying to say, well, you know, it's just all about the money. They're just being greedy. No, in fact, most of the people, no, let me correct that. Every person we talked to said they were willing to sit down and negotiate. Every single person. But they said now is not the time. Now's not the time to be taking people's rights away. What I find interesting is the mainstream media has focused on the fact that these people have a voice on the job. And you know what? They don't want to have to give up a pay cut, especially at a time when the governor of this state gave away $140 million. I think, you know, maybe I'm wrong here, but stealing from teachers, stealing from firemen, stealing from policemen, stealing from the guy who plows the street, stealing from, you know, all the social workers and on and on, stealing from them to hand money to the wealth class, to me, not a great thing to do, not a nice thing to do, not a family values thing to do, none of that. And I look at the front page of the USA Today today. Right across the very top, for the very wealthy, luxury is back. Nothing other than, you know, a little sentence off to the other side about the workers here. Luxury's back. So I'm asking you, if luxury is back, if it's truly back, why are we stealing from teachers? Why are we going after policemen? Why are we doing this? This is a power grab, pure and simple. What this is an opportunist governor who wants to make a name for himself in the conservative circles, and this is his ticket to fame. You know, you get to the top two ways. You know something, or you stepped on somebody. And he's attempting to climb into national prominence by trampling all over the state working people, all over the teachers, their assistants, the TAs who amazingly have really been the ones that brought this whole thing together. And over at the Capitol, here in Madison, over at the Capitol building, some of the nicest people I've ever met. And there was talk of the T-Twizzlers coming in, you know, bringing busloads of people in. We're gonna take over. We're gonna show them their union thugs. So they bring in the handfuls of T-Twizzlers, and they're ready for a fight. They're instigating, they're causing trouble, they're pointing fingers, they're calling names. And the people of Wisconsin, because understand, 95% of the people here, I would estimate, are people from Wisconsin, who, to be honest, they're some of the nicest people I've ever met. The one woman bumped into me, and just a little woman, and she was, oh my God, I'm so sorry. Are you okay? On and on and on. I'm going, I'm like four times as big as you are. You can't possibly hurt me. Oh, I'm so sorry. But, you know, I actually saw. Now, this we got to figure out as a nation how to use this energy. I actually saw teenage college, you know, 19, 20, that laying on the floor with rags in both hands, scrubbing the floor of the Capitol. There were like six or seven of them cleaning up after themselves. This has been the cleanest protest I've ever been at. They actually have people who are on trash duty. I'm not kidding you. This is the cleanest protest I've ever seen. These kids are responsible. They're intelligent. They're articulate. And we're going to be talking to them over the next couple of days, because I think this is where we have to be. And the reason we have to be here is we have to see how it's done. This is an opportunity for all of us to see democracy in action and to see how you stand up to power, how you tell truth to power, and how you hold them accountable. And it's something I think we're going to have to look at as we move forward. It is most certainly something we're going to have to look at, because this summer, the union contracts are up for our state workers this summer. Tom Corporate has been fairly coy about what his plans are. So I'm kind of interested to see where that goes. I think he's just holding his cards close to his vest, going, hey, you know, if it works in Wisconsin, and if it works in Ohio, we might have the ability to do it here in Pennsylvania. And don't you think that the business community isn't pulling for it? The big business community, not the small folks. Because if you walk around here in Madison, Wisconsin, you see the small businesses. And I'm not talking about Halliburton. I'm not talking about Wall Street or big legal, these legal firms that pull in hundreds of millions of dollars a year. I'm talking about the little mom and pops, the folks who they're the only employer, or them and their family members are the only employees, or maybe they got one or two. Those small business people, the people we think of when the Republicans use and abuse the small business mantra, these folks, they're behind the teachers. They're behind the state workers. They're behind these folks, and they know why. Because the wages that they earn afford them the opportunity to be patrons and to go to these shops and to go to the restaurants. So as we move forward, I think it's interesting to think about it in the context that it's coming home. We're going to see it in Pennsylvania. We're going to see this battle being played out. And maybe it's a good thing. You know, maybe what's going on here has to happen, and it's best that it happens here, because this is where most of this stuff was born. The right for state employees to collectively bargain, born right here. This was the very first place here in Wisconsin, and then the federal government went that way with Kennedy in 62, I believe it was, but 1959. Their governor said, you know what, we're gonna follow this. And these workers have had that right to collective bargaining ever since. Real quick, I want to get into this USA Today piece, because I think it's indicative of the coverage that this has gotten since it began 7 days ago. This is kind of indicative of it. All it talks about is money. Every person that I've met, every one of the workers that I've met, it's not about money. It's about their rights. And USA Today had a couple of questions, like a little Q&A for the average person who doesn't quite understand what's going on. And since the mainstream media isn't covering it, here is a nice way for us to spin it so our corporate masters will be very happy with us. So they asked the question, why are the stakes so high in Wisconsin? And you would think, you know, why are the stakes so high, Jake? You know, are the stakes high because, you know, workers are going to lose their voice on the job because you're going to see a plummeting wage structure, or you're going to see people leaving the profession, and you're going to have a brain drain? Is that why the stakes are so high? No, what they came up with is money and power, political power. What happens could spread to other states and affect how campaigns are financed. Wow, that's the best you could come up with. A very corporate, very industrial answer. As where I would say, you know why this is important? This is important because you have an overreaching government, a tyrannical government who is out to crush these working people. Take their rights away, strip them of the ability to stand up and defend themselves. But that's not how it's being played in the media. Not one bit.
And you haven't heard one iota of discussion about similar situations which are coming down. We're talking New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Ohio, Indiana. This is so, so important because this is the first shot in the war. Make no mistake, it's a war on the middle class, and it's a war on working people and their right to collectively bargain. Pure and simple. And that is extremely important.
So they go on to the next question. What are the issues? In 15 words, we're going to lay out the issues for you, because that's pretty much what USA Today does. It's the simple-minded newspaper. But here's their answer. Republican Governor Scott Walker wants most government workers to pay more for pensions and health care. And the changes would save taxpayers and cost employees about $150 million a year in a $13 billion budget. In return, Walker has promised no layoffs. The unions have indicated they may accept the financial demands, but reject limits on collective bargaining. Here's the thing. He's promising no layoffs if they take these massive cuts, which are between 18 and 40%. You know, at the end of the day, I think I could put everybody back to work. Just let me break that minimum wage law every once in a while. Let me cheat people out of overtime. Let me do those things. I could keep people working. But you know, again, they're framing it in a way, and this is the way I'm seeing it. They're framing it in a way. Well, these union people, they don't want to give that up. And in fact, they say, so why is there no deal? Next question. Union's power is the sticking point. Wisconsin was the first state in 1959 to let government workers unionize. Strong public employee unions are part of the state heritage and a key source of financial and political support for Democrats. Again, this is not about the unions as much as it's about the workers. It's about these people who have stood together and about these kids who are marching in the streets and about these families who are coming out to this event and saying, no, you're not going to strip our rights. Sit down at the bargaining table. We'll have a discussion and we'll work through it. But you're not going to strip my rights away. And, you know, it goes on to talk about other things. You know, why are the limits being placed on unions? Well, obviously, they want to control what these people do. Walker says managers, and this is the beautiful part. Walker says the managers of cities and schools need freedom to run their operations more efficiently, like business. So remember back during the election when I told you to watch out for that phrase because everybody was using it. We need to be more business friendly. We need to be more business friendly. We need to be more business friendly. Well, I'm telling you, business friendly is not always a good thing. Because as you're seeing here in Wisconsin, business friendly means stealing from working people. Business friendly means taking rights away from people. Business friendly means no environmental protections, no child labor laws, no overtime. Business friendly means screw workers, and we want bigger profits, bigger tax breaks, bigger shifting of the economic pie. So the question I'm going to ask before we leave here is why? Why is it socialism when workers want to join together and bargain for better wages? Why is it socialism when we don't want to have to be the ones who pay all the bills? And why is it patriotic when the banks were in trouble? Why is it patriotic when the wealthy need handouts? Why is it patriotic when the country's in trouble that we share the pain, that we're the ones who are really the ones who pick it up and carry it on our back and own it? You know, the Wall Street people, they didn't suffer. There's no shared sacrifice. And if you look at the front page, luxury is back. And I ask you, if luxury is back, why are we stealing from teachers? Why are we stealing from these workers? It doesn't make any sense on any level. Well, that's what we're going to be talking about tonight. No phone calls. We're still working out our tech problems. But if you want to contact us, rick@thericksmithshow.com. We will be answering emails during the program. And if you do email, we will most certainly put it on the air. When we come back, we're going to talk with John Nichols from The Nation. Again, rick@thericksmithshow.com. We're right back after this.
Values are more than slogans. The Rick Smith Show.
Attention class, today's word is fractal inequality. Okay, that's a phrase, not a word, and a very wonky one. It means uneven inequality, but the unevenness refers not to the relatively poor, but to the relatively super rich, the one percenters versus the one-tenth and one-one-hundredths of one percenters. The 1% averages an income of about $1 million a year, while the 1/100th's clique tops $30 million. Wow, how do you even spend 30 big ones a year? Your penthouse, Lamborghini, dinner every night at Le Petit Fortune, etc., still leaves some $20 million for you to play with. Luckily, the New York Times has answered this question for us commoners in a recent article headlined, Wealthiest Americans Go House Hunting Abroad. It seems that there are bargains to be had on old castles in the Irish countryside, so many super-rich Americans are buying a piece of the old sod for themselves. Parisian townhouses and wine country chateaus are always in vogue, so why not have one or two? But the big action for American swells is in the Caribbean, where a five-bedroom villa on St. Bart's, for example, can sop up $14 million of your spare cash. The article tells us, however, that the latest trend is not simply to buy a fabulous house overlooking the pink sand beaches of some resort island, but to buy your very own Caribbean island. What cachet! One popular possibility is the Exuma Cays, a cluster of 360 islands in the Bahamas. For instance, here's one 47-acre island with a 3,000-foot airstrip and seven white sand beaches that can be had for just over $15 million. This is Jim Hightower saying, as an online dealer in private islands notes, buying one is about the majestic image it bestows on the buyer. They want to be steward of their own little piece of the world, he marveled.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, HightowerLowdown.org.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Here we are still in Madison, Wisconsin, on the front lines of the class war. Again, what I'm seeing here, just absolutely amazing. The young people taking to the streets, tens of thousands here. I'm sitting here with John Nichols from The Nation. John, thanks for taking time for me.
Well, it's great to be on with you, Rick, and I want to thank you for coming. One of the things I've been telling people all over the country is that they really should just get in their car and come on out, or get a plane ticket if you can afford it. Because this is history. I spoke this morning to about 1,000 members of the American Federation of Teachers. These are the professional employees who are perhaps, in many ways, most threatened by this deal. They've got reasonably good state jobs, and they've got a strong union. They're the ones that the governor would really like to break. And, you know, we had a great event, wonderful event, before we marched over to the rally. But the thing that I suggested to them is that often when you're in the midst of history, you don't take a deep breath and pause and look around. You know, you're so into it, and it's so exciting, and
right.
You work yourself to the bone, you fall asleep at night. And we all need to pause here and realize that you've been doing labor radio for a long time.
6 years.
Long time, and active in the struggles for longer than that.
27 years.
Even got your Teamster shirt on. And I think a lot of us who've covered movements, social movements, political movements, cultural movements, you know, we always ask ourselves the same question. You know, when is it finally going to break? I mean, when is it going to be too much? And at what point are folks going to come out and say no more? You know, they shut all our factories, right? They use their free trade deals and frankly, the incredible bias of our federal government against manufacturing industries in the U.S. They've privatized, downsized, outsourced in the private sector to the point where we're now down to single digits. In most of the country as regards private sector trade unionism. Now they're coming for the public employees. And this is the fight of our lifetime, because if we don't win this one, there's no place to build back from. This is the essential fight. And we fight in Wisconsin. We win in Wisconsin. And then we take it from here. You know, one of the things I keep hearing people say is, well, you know, they're going to, Scott Walker's going to export his bad ideas to other states. Maybe.
No, those bad ideas are there.
Yeah, they're already there. I want to export the movement to other states.
There you go.
Send this idea out, and you know what? It is powerful.
Well, this is why we're here.
I can
see
that.
What I'm saying is, you know, the reason the people in our area have to hear what's going on here and have to know what these people are doing is because this summer, this could be Pennsylvania.
Well, there's no doubt. In Ohio,
next week.
Or this week, it's already begun. It's a very interesting thing. The Reverend Jesse Jackson was here on Friday night to speak to 50,000 people outside the Capitol, just a few feet from where you're set up in this hearing room here. And he was so blown away. He had tears in his eyes. And as he finished, he talked about marching with King, and he said, I want you to pause and realize this is a Martin Luther King moment. This is a Gandhi moment. This is one of those rare moments in American history and world history where something incredibly powerful is happening. And we need to export this to other places. I can tell you that around Wisconsin, it's working. The other day in Wausau, Wisconsin, which is in the north, it's a union town, but been battered quite a bit. Not that big a town. They had 3,000 people show up for a rally out in Juneau, Wisconsin, literally a crossroads. 500 people came out. In a suburb of the city of Milwaukee, Wauwatosa, 700 people came out. We'll have a rally later today in Racine. I expect we'll see 2,000 to 3,000 people come out. This is not just Madison. It's not just public employees. I think it's a tremendous number of people, young and old, black and white, all sorts of backgrounds, who have felt like there just wasn't any point to it. Yep. They couldn't see why. And now suddenly they're like, hey, it's real. And I think what's happening is they're making this exponential leap. They're jumping over all those years of frustration and anger, anger.
I got to be honest with you. When the Tea Party thing first caught, I thought this is what that would hopefully turn into.
Well, you were right.
I was hoping that people would take that anger that they were feeling, mm-hmm. that their 401ks that had become 200.5s and all the job losses through the years and all of this working class anger would finally come to a head and we would march in the streets and begin to take the country in a more egalitarian, more working class direction.
Way. Yeah. Well, it would just say, look, I mean, just do what any 4-year-old would tell you is the right thing to do, right? Make sure that nobody's hungry. Make sure that nobody doesn't have a roof over their head. Make sure that everybody's got a decent job and that they can have a sense of worth. I mean, it's not easy to do economics, but it is easy to organize a fair society.
Right.
And the incredible thing is that when you go out there and you talk to folks, whether this is a 60-year-old teacher or a 16-year-old student, whether it's a steel worker or a state forester or a snowplow driver, there's sort of this dawning sense of what's going on here. And I want to emphasize this. This is really important. People are educating themselves, and that's something that every powerful movement does. It begins to say, okay, obviously, we've been failed by most of our media. We don't have the Rick Smith Show everywhere in America. And obviously, we've been failed, frankly, by a lot of our education system, which doesn't teach labor history, doesn't teach movement history. And all these folks are getting sort of an instantaneous download of history.
Yep. Especially when you talk about the governor wanting to call in the National Guard. When I first heard that, I'm immediately going back to some of my readings of the 1800s.
Yes.
Where governors were having the militia drop bombs on people and shoot people in the back, like in Latimer, just up the road from where we're at. What they call Labor's Lost Massacre. All of this stuff comes back to me. Now we're using the militia the National Guard to come after workers. What's going on here?
You know, this is an interesting thing. Governor Walker, who I've known for 20 years, and is a pretty, kind of a hail fellow well met. I know that officially he's the devil incarnate this week or something. That's how we talk about him. He's actually a pretty nice guy. He's a real conservative, though. Right winger, no doubt about that. But he's a smart political player. And I think that he didn't use the term National Guard casually. I believe that was a political tactic, and they mentioned it mainly.
It was a veiled threat.
Yeah, well, it was more than that. I think it wasn't even that. I would be surprised if he calls them out. I may be wrong. I could be proven wrong tomorrow. My sense is that the goal was to sort of play that old game, to tell you, ooh, labor struggle, working people out on the street, dangerous. Stay away. If you're not part of a union, don't go near it. Don't bring your kids down. Well, it was an interesting tactic. There's only one mistake. He messed with the teachers, right? And the teachers in this town, Madison, Wisconsin, Madison Teachers Inc., walked out. They walked out before all the other unions, and they came up to the Capitol a week ago almost. And that meant the schools were out. And the most fascinating thing happened. It was a nice day. Schools were out. I'm driving up here on Wednesday morning, coming up to the Capitol, and I saw this long line of people walking up the street. And as I got closer, I realized it was all the kids from the schools. They were walking up themselves. They didn't have a day of school. They organized themselves to come. And one of the big debates in Madison households this week has been, what's the proper age to go to the Capitol on your own? Can a seventh grader go on their own, or should the parents take them up? And so you understand what's happened here is we've broken through that fear factor. We've broken through that stereotype of labor struggles are dangerous or threatening. Now it is labor struggle is a party. Labor struggle is fun. It's beautiful. My 7-year-old daughter was out on the street with a bullhorn chanting, "This is what democracy looks like." Now, all of her friends, her daycare friends, had come out, the kids she was in daycare with.
And that's one of the things that really amazing to me.
Yeah.
We walked through here last night. You saw people with their children sleeping on the Capitol floor because they do understand this is history.
Yeah.
This is something that they're going to remember.
They understand this is history, but they also understand something really, really vital, that this is community. This is something that's beyond the unions now, way beyond the unions, and also beyond economics. And you know, so we define our lives so thoroughly through economics that we think that's the only thing there is. You know, right. It's all about money. Now, we can love our spouse or our partner. We can love our kids. But beyond that, the notion of love and community, that's something we've pretty much beaten out of our society. But there's a wonderful Canadian, there was a good Canadian socialist named Bob Rae. He's not a socialist anymore, but when he became the premier of Ontario, he gave a speech, and he said, this is all about love and solidarity, that the whole point of government and of what we do is love and solidarity, that we love people we don't even know. We show solidarity with them because they need us. And Wisconsin has touched that now. I don't know if we'll hold on to it. I'm not a seer. But what I can tell you is that this moment is one that we're people who don't usually get there have superseded economics. We've superseded the structures that they tell us we have to fall into. And we're out having a great time. People are singing. People are dancing. You know, Emma Goldman, I believe, or was it Rosa Luxemburg? You'll tell me, who said, if I can't dance, I don't want to be a part of your revolution.
I believe it was Emma Goldman.
The fact is they have taken that in. And these events are fun. You know, at night here in the Capitol, they show labor movies on the walls of the Capitol. And they've got reading libraries set up. This is exactly what a Capitol should be. It should be a people's house.
And it's remarkable what they've done. I mean, the nicest protest I've ever been to.
We are the nicest. We are the nicest people.
Nicest people I've ever met.
Wisconsin.
I had a woman bump into me, little itty bitty woman. She was, oh my God, I'm sorry, are you okay? And I'm going, I'm like four times as big as you are.
Well, you know,
you couldn't possibly hurt me.
In Wisconsin, if you knock somebody down, they say, sorry. You know, I mean, we are very, very polite. In fact, the great hilarious slogan that anybody from outside Wisconsin doesn't get, all Wisconsinites do. The hilarious slogan of this struggle is, thank you. You know, Tom Morello was down there on the floor from Rage Against the Machine. He's about to speak. I was talking from upstairs, and I shouted down to him. And when people realized that here this rock star was in the midst of them, they all started chanting, thank you. You know, and that's what we do. Wisconsinites are polite. We're nice people. And that's the trouble. I mean, we presume that relationships are built on trust, human feelings, and a little bit of continuity that, you know, if you know somebody, you don't screw somebody over that you've known for a while. That's just not right.
Right.
And Scott Walker has broken all those standards. I've known Scott for a long time. I do not dislike him, but I have to tell you, I do not, at least as a person, but he offended something in this state's sensibility that caused a response. That response is now being watched by people across America and
across the world.
Yeah, I know. I was on Al Jazeera last night, or two nights ago, and they they opened up and they said, you know, we're talking to you because people in Egypt are very interested in this story.
Well, I mean, because if it all depends on how we handle things here. I mean, if tomorrow they come in and they throw everybody out.
Yeah, we're worse than Egypt. Yeah. Well, here's another one, too. Did you hear about I'm sure you have your reporting so well, but an Egyptian trade union called in a pizza order and had it sent to the Capitol.
Holding a sign in the square saying we support the workers in Wisconsin.
But they're actually using their credit cards to call over here and buy us food. But the most hilarious thing, too, is that we, of course, Egypt's been a part of this from the beginning. There are people on the first rally that had Arabic language slogans on their posters. They'd gone online and figured out how to say things. But the best sign I saw was on, when was it? Saturday. Huge rally. 100,000, better part of 100,000 people out. And the sign said, I thought Cairo would be warmer.
But let me ask you a last question here, because, you know, the thing that I think my listeners have to understand is, you know, while we've had a nice conversation, it's been fun.
Yeah.
You know, the people are enjoying their time here. At the end of this, this is about a deadly serious topic.
No. Yeah, I mean, it is a deadly serious topic.
And how do we learn the lessons from here to, as you said, export it to Ohio, Pennsylvania, Missouri, New Hampshire, Tennessee, the list goes on.
That's a great question. And I think that it is deadly serious, as the struggles we've been engaged in for a very, very long time have been deadly serious. You know, when a factory closes in, you know, western Pennsylvania, that's deadly serious. Somebody's going to commit suicide. Other people are going to, you know, not have health care and, you know, fall into illness that will ultimately take them. Their kids are going to grow up in more difficult circumstances. Lots of troubles come from that. So all of these things are deadly serious. And so although it's important in that regard, I think we have to step back and say, okay, the serious stuff, we've had that with us all along. You know, that's been a part of us all along. So what's different here? What is distinct? And I will tell you, at the bottom of the signs in the Capitol, which has been occupied now for a week, better part of a week, with sometimes tens of thousands of people in this great old building. I grew up here, and this building, when you walk into it, even in the summer, is cool.
It's a beautiful place.
Yeah, but it's cool. It's the marble and everything keeps it refreshing and cool. So I walk, you know, but I came in this building a couple days ago, and it was hot. And you think, well, what made it hot? And you thought, okay, 10,000 people who are 98.7 degrees, that's going to make a place hot. And so that's the lesson, the only lesson. And I don't mean it, honestly. The only lesson is if they do something horrible to us, if they close our factory, if they lay us off, if they cut our benefits, if we come out alone, you know, we're just going to be somebody yelling in the wilderness. But if 1,000, 10,000, 20,000, 50,000, 100,000 of us come out, it matters.
Absolutely.
We matter. So that's it. There's no lesson.
It's about getting to the streets.
Yeah.
It's never changed.
And realizing that democracy doesn't end on Election Day. Democracy begins on Election Day. You vote, and then you go out and hold them to account. We are petitioning for the redress of grievances. Our Constitution gives us that right. And you know what? I understand why the Tea Party people were so into the Constitution. It's kind of fun.
Yep, absolutely.
Thanks,
John
brother.
Nichols, I appreciate your time. We're going to take a quick break right back after this. This is the Rick Smith Show. We're working people on the phone.
I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. Chances are you may never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, inspecting an elevator, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org.
For a change, the Rick Smith Show.
Comes out hard in the center of all forms.
back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out our website at thericksmithshow.com. We're not taking phone calls tonight, live here in Madison, Wisconsin. The people are still in the streets. It is bitter cold here, snow and ice. The weather has just been horrible and uncooperative for the last day and a half. Truth of the matter is it's cold. And to have these people come out and these folks come out and stand in the cold and have their voices heard is a testament not only to the people, but to how important this issue truly is. And the reality is we've got families, you know, who are marching in this. We've got families who are staying overnight. People are in the Capitol. They've got their sleeping bags. In fact, we're going to be doing that tonight, so we can get some contact with folks. You know, and while the people here are saying, look, we're going to see this through, they have a governor who has said it's going to take, they're willing to take it as long as it's going to take. They're going to stand their ground. He had a press conference today basically saying, hey, tough luck, buddy. We're going to do what we want to do, Jake. And, you know, I got to be honest, at the end of this, it's going to be a battle of the wills because this guy's got the money on his side.
He does, but, you know, it's a... Politics is a funny game, Rick. It's a roulette wheel. He might think he doesn't have a lot to lose, but there's some Republicans who do. Some of them could face recall. Some of them could face a huge backlash at the polls. And just let me say one thing about today. I was tremendously impressed with two things. First of all, it was the energy. It was the constant energy and clapping, singing of songs, speeches. You had union members there actually with one guy who was playing a trumpet, played a beautiful rendition of the national anthem. I never heard that before, and it was absolutely beautiful. You have people there with drums. And you hear this national drum beat about, well, you know, the labor movement really wasn't totally, in sync. The last election, there were a couple unions that endorsed this governor. One of them was the firefighters and one of them was the police. Well, about 1 or 2 o'clock when the festivities really got to their height, in full dress uniform, the police and the firefighters came in and I happened to be standing at a very good, place up a little above on the third tier and I could see these people marching in, hundreds of them, I gotta tell you. I've been around a long time and it gave me chills. It gave me chills. I see nothing. Total solidarity by the labor movement on this issue. And the governor in the end might have bitten off more than he can chew.
Even though he has said that the police and the firefighters are not on the chopping block, they've got to realize that they're all in this together, that, you know, they're all in the shark tank. They are all in this battle together, because once they do away with the public sector workers, once they're able to destroy the teachers' ability to fight back, they're next. And they have to understand that. And again, you know, what's interesting to me is, you know, there was a report, I think today it was, where the police union president came out and said, you know, his name's Tracy Fuller. He's the executive board president with the Wisconsin Law Enforcement Association. He said that, you know, while they don't agree with this bill, there's nothing in it that makes sense. He said, you know, the reality of this bill is, you know, to bust up unions. There's nothing that makes sense, because by not collecting things out of workers' paychecks, you're going to kill United Way donations. That's an unintended consequence of the governor's plan to destroy workers' rights in this bill. So, I mean, a lot of bad stuff in it, but here's what this guy was saying. He's going, well, you know, at the end of the day, while we agree with the protesters and we agree, you know, that they should have the rights and all this, if the governor gives us, you know, the mandate, if the governor says you have to break that up, they're going to don their riot gear and they are going to, as he said, do what we have to do. And which takes me, you know, kind of to this, what happened in Egypt. The whole reason that was able to succeed is the power of the gun, the power of the prison, if you will, refused to get involved in it. And I worry what's going to happen if Walker does do that.
Well, I have to say the police and the Capitol Police especially were very, very
They're terrific.
Reserved. They were
nice.
They were
nice guys.
Very laid back. You could see them standing in the corner. No argument. There was no violence. It was a very, very peaceful exercise in exercising your democratic rights. I happened to run into a fire marshal. I was out trying to get guests for our show, and I ran into this lady, and she looked quite frankly like a VIP. So I approached her, and she happened to be a fire marshal. And we got talking about these protests the last couple of days, and I said, you know, I from what I understand, it's been extremely nonviolent. These people have been very, very well behaved. And she said, absolutely. She said, I haven't seen one incident that would say anything to the contrary. These people have been have exhibited a beautiful example of what America is about. You can be effective without being violent. You can be effective by going to the streets.
No, violence letting, kills this. Violence
letting
kills
the
this.
People know. Oh, and by the way, I did talk to people who say, and this hasn't, and Fox News isn't going to tell you this, folks, but I can tell you, I had more than one person say, you know, when those Tea Party people were there, they were trying to goat people into a fight. They had people with cameras right near them.
Yep.
They would push into people. They would try to say things that were very confrontational in hopes that you would take a punch at them, in hopes that you would say the wrong thing while they recorded that. And that was totally delivered. And if you think there wasn't money behind that, I'm quite sure there was.
That's what they do. I mean, they can't win on having a discussion. They can only win on ginning up some kind of distraction. And that's what it would be. It would be a distraction. But in this case, any type of violence, I do believe, will be met with maximum resistance by the state. They will call in the National Guard. I do believe this wholeheartedly. If something happens and you have a couple of instances where, you know, you got some pushing, shoving, whatever, which there hasn't been any, and I don't believe there's going to be any, but in the unfortunate aftermath of something like that happening, I do believe they will come down with an iron fist. And what bothers me about that, you're going to get a couple of knuckleheads like the T-Twits who came and tried to cause trouble. In the end, the people who will be harmed here are not the people who caused the trouble, like the T-Twizzlers. They're going to be people with their children. I take my kids to rallies. I don't know that I would bring them to the Capitol to sleep overnight, but there are numerous families that I saw, you know, bringing their sleeping bags, sleeping on the floor of the Capitol, being part of this historic moment, because they want their children to be part of this, and they want their children to see the wonderful rights that they still have, and that they're worth fighting for. That, at the end of all of this, regardless of what the New York Times says or the USA Today or the Wall Street Journal, this is not about money. This is about someone's right to exist. This is the right of association. This is the right of assembly. And if Walker decides in a day or two or three to kick everybody out of the Capitol, it's about the right to address your government. It's about the right of redress of your grievances. You know, that little constitutional thing.
That thing that seems to be in a way, all it's that pesky thing that's in the way of some of these people who want to be heavy-handed, that little thing called the Constitution. You know, the thing that the teabag people think that they really know. If I can say one thing, I saw a group of kids today, and God, it's got to warm your heart. You know, these kids are 9 or 10, and they're, you know, they're in there, kill the bill. They're in the hallway. And these kids, they obviously know each other, and probably their parents and their mothers brought them there. And they're in unison chanting, kill the bill. I mean, that's beautiful. That's absolutely beautiful.
And when we come back, we're going to be talking with Margaret Stumpf and her son, Gunter, who, you know, are here, spent the night. They're here in Madison to protest and to have their voices heard. So when we come back, we're going to talk with Margaret and Gunter Stumpf. This is the Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Grab that cash with both hands and make smart policy. And sound investment matters. The Rick Smith Show.
This is the Media Matters Minute. I'm John Kerr. The nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office recently released its economic estimates of the impact of raising the minimum wage. On CNN Newsroom, host Carol Costello was joined by Wall Street Journal editorial board member and Heritage Foundation chief economist Stephen Moore to discuss the report.
I want to be very clear about what exactly the CBO is saying, because it's easy to just look at this in terms of black and white.
Right.
The CBO acknowledged that its calculation is an estimate and said actual job losses could range from very slight,
right,
to as many as 1 million positions. That, on the other hand, it also says it would increase the earnings for 16.5 million Americans.
Yep.
900,000 workers would be raised out of poverty. So
that's right.
Many people would say, I'm willing to take that bet.
Yeah, you know, I guess that's the question. Are you willing to destroy some jobs to raise the incomes of others? My attitude.
But it's not even clear that it'll destroy any jobs at all.
For more on this and other stories, please visit MediaMatters.org.
Don't you know, we're talking about a revolution sounds. Don't you know?
Together, we can make America better. The Rick Smith Show. Progressive talk with a conscience.
While they're standing in the welfare lines, crying at the doorsteps of those armies of salvation, wasting time in the unemployment lines, sitting around waiting for a promotion. Don't you know? Talking about it. Gonna rise up, get there, yeah. Poor people gonna rise up, take what's there. Don't you know you better run, 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 run.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Here we are in Madison, Wisconsin, front lines of the class war. I'm telling you, folks, some of the things that I've seen, amazing. I've met just some of the greatest people on this planet, I think. I'm sitting here with Margaret Stumpf and her son, Gunter. Margaret, thanks for taking time for me.
You're welcome, Rick. I'm happy to be here.
You know, I'm looking at this event, and I'm looking at the people, really just an amazing, amazing group of folks who've come up.
Yeah, this has been a fantastic exercise in unity. It's the kind of collaborative teaming that I talk about with my students. It's the kind of work that we do in the classroom every day, and it's nice to see it happening here on the Capitol steps.
You know, you say you're a teacher. What do you teach?
I am a special education teacher and have been for 20 years.
Good for you. That, to me, I got to be honest, I started off years ago in college as wanting to go into special ed, and I couldn't do it. It takes really a special person who, and I give you credit for that.
Well, thank you.
Because I to be honest, I couldn't do it. Some of the stories and the people that I met were just heartbreaking.
There's never a dull moment. That's what I like the best about it.
Now, looking at what's going on here, give me your initial reactions. What are you feeling?
Well, my initial reactions to it were fear and the timeliness of the whole situation. I'm feeling a little more at ease about that. We've been able to buy a little bit of time with our 14 Democratic heroes who have gone over the border and given us a little more time to try to work on a resolution to this. But I am still very fearful. I am fearful that if the union rights are disbanded, dissolved here in Madison, Wisconsin, then the trickle-down effect across the United States will really be detrimental to the education of all our children and also have really severe economic detrimental effects.
You know, speaking of your children, I walked around last night and people were staying over, and I understand you slept here last night in the Capitol.
I did. I slept overnight with my son here, Hank. He's 12, and his friend Darian, who's outside the door right now.
Yeah, what really amazed me is the number of people who did bring their children to camp in overnight, from infants to teenagers. Just an amazing scene.
Yeah, it's a fantastic experience. I want my kids to be part of the democratic process. They've actually, Hank has been down with me almost every single day from early morning until late at night. Last night we did sleep over. There are so many people that are needing a little bit of respite from their courageous campaign here. They've been here sleeping over for 5 nights, and so we decided that we would come give them a little relief so they could go make some, you know, fulfill some obligations in their homes so they could come back again this morning.
You know, being an educator and looking at what's going on here and the discussions about labor rights, something that I don't think has been discussed in an open forum for at least a generation. As an educator, do you see this as really an opportunity to reach out to people your son's age and maybe a little older to say, you know, this is why collective bargaining is important. This maybe is our history, because one of the things that caught my attention right away is Governor Walker threatening to call out the National Guard, you know, harkening me back to the 1800s where we were using the National Guard to gun down workers who dared go on strike.
Well, I think one of the favorite signs I've seen so far is, can the National Guard teach physics? I was really impressed by that.
That's
because
beautiful.
I'm not really sure that's an opportunity, and I don't think giving someone a classroom makes them a teacher either. One of the things that I've been thinking a lot about is I've been thinking about some of our civil rights leaders. I've been thinking about Martin Luther King. I've been thinking about Rosa Parks, Cesar Chavez. I teach my students every year, you know, to look at what history has done for our rights as workers, what history has done for our rights as people. I teach them about these greats that have been on the forefront of the civil rights movement, and how can I teach about this if I don't stand behind it, if I'm not down here every day saying I won't back down because this is an injustice, then that I don't have the right to teach about these greats anymore either. So I'm here as part of that collective group, our civil rights movement.
And, you know, some of the folks that I've talked to have said, you know, it's not about me anymore. I'm okay. It's about the children. It's about my kids who may want to take my job at some point down the line. What kind of life are they going to have?
Right, and that's what I've been saying all along. You know, I'll be fine. We'll figure it out. But it is about the working rights of the children I teach. And my job as a teacher is to be an advocate for every single student in the state of Wisconsin, not just in my classroom. And right now I'm advocating for their rights to collectively bargain. I'm willing to chip in monetarily. We in Madison are willing to extend the school year in order to make sure that our children get those days of education. But we realize that it's a trade-off. And right now, the bigger issue on the table is those collective bargaining rights for our students as they enter the workforce and as they continue to be workers in Wisconsin.
Right.
And all over the United States right now, because everybody is watching and they're taking, you know, they're taking the lead from what's happening right here.
Yeah, as I'm saying, this is the front lines. If all goes poorly here, you know, Ohio's next, Pennsylvania's on the chopping block, Missouri, New Hampshire, Tennessee, the list goes on. Indiana, I mean, you could go right across the country and name the states that are left, you know, the free states, if you will.
And, you know, for us, this is a political action. We love our jobs. We want to be in the classroom. We want to be with our students right now. I am happy to see the students that are coming down here to support us and that are learning firsthand from what's happening here. But this is only a political action. We want to be back to work.
Yep, absolutely. Can I talk to your son for a second?
Absolutely.
Gunter, I appreciate you taking time. How old are you, Gunter?
I am 12 years old.
12 years old. What do you think of what Mom's doing here?
I think it is great that we're here. I mean, school, sad that we have to miss school, but I don't think this can pass. Like, I don't want it to pass because it would take my rights away as a worker when I'm older. And if, like you were saying, if it happens here, what are the other states going to think? And it could just go all over the United States.
Yep, because the history of Wisconsin with workers' rights is one of the best in the country. I mean, this was the first state to allow public sector workers to collectively bargain. This is the first state in the country to have workman's compensation law for injured workers. There's a rich history here, and I look at that, and I hope that your generation learns this. And I'm looking at this, and I think there's an opportunity here for you. So now you were able to actually testify in
yes.
front of a hearing. What was that like?
Well, for me, it wasn't hard because I do acting and I'm on stage a lot, and you know, I like saying what I think is right, and my teachers have always said stand up for your own rights.
Absolutely.
And that's what I'm doing here right now.
So what did you tell the hearing? What did you tell the people?
I said that if this goes through, what is going to happen to my generation, to the people, to the kids right now when they're older and they have a job, and if Cesar Chavez can do it, we can also do it.
What was it like sleeping here last night?
I thought it was
on the
awesome.
Hard marble floor.
Well, it was very uncomfortable, but I thought it was awesome to show our support.
It was pretty amazing. It's pretty remarkable seeing the number of people here and really the solidarity. You know, a friend of mine says solidarity is not just a word, it's an action. And looking at what happened here last night, you can honestly see that it is truly an action. Gunter, I appreciate your time, and I appreciate the work that you're doing, and keep up the good work, because I know you'll do real well.
I will. Thank you.
Mom, one last thing I got. You know, as we move forward in this, let's say this goes south, which you know, all of us are hoping it's not. Everyone here is fighting that it doesn't happen. But what is it going to mean to you and your family in the event that they strip these rights away from you? You know, what do you see coming down the road? What happens to education? Because my big fear is that the voice that teachers have will be stripped away.
Well, I know that it's going to mean a lot of things for my classroom. It's going to take Badger Care away from my students. The school I work in right now, we're 60% poverty, and so taking that away from our students is going to take away the preparedness that so many of them have for school. It's going to take away their ability to have good, solid meals. It's going to take away their ability to get health care, and it's going to make them less prepared to come to school and to be good learners. It's going to impact the classroom, because when you have kids in your classroom that are hungry, that are not cared for, you know, they can't be good learners, and then they make it really challenging for other people to learn too. Right now we've got a nice balance, and everybody, you know, we're ready. Our students are ready to be learners. We have good class sizes. They're not always small, but they're not always huge. I think the largest class I teach is 28. I case manage 14 students. If that size increases, it's going to be really detrimental. Right now I go to work at 7 in the morning, and sometimes I'm still working at 9:30 at night. And I don't have a whole lot more hours in my day doing my job.
But, Margaret, you're overpaid.
I am overpaid, yes. No, I'm not really overpaid. I get paid for 9 months out of the year. I know a lot of people really firmly believe that teachers are paid year-round. I am not paid year-round. I'm on a nine-month contract. I distribute that contract over 12 months.
Right.
But I am on a nine-month contract. I'm not calling in sick right now. I can't afford to not be at my job, but I can't afford to lose my rights as a worker.
Absolutely.
And so I'm not calling in sick. I'm calling in well. I'm calling in here.
Beautiful.
And that's what I need to do.
Beautiful. Margaret, Gunter, Stump, thank you for taking time. I appreciate it. And keep up the fight.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
All righty. We're going to take a quick break right back after this. This is the Rick Smith Show. We're working people.
And make America better. The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to the best of The Rick Smith Show.
It's The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to the best of The Rick Smith Show. Tonight's program is a look back 3 years ago today as the assaults in Wisconsin ramped up and it became apparent that workers' rights were under attack. This program is an important look back because it shows us how we got to where we are today. If you have any thoughts, any questions, any comments, we'd love to hear it. You can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Thanks for tuning in.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell. Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker has been doing most of his negotiations and addresses to the people of Wisconsin via the Fox News Network. Last week, he appeared on the Greta Van Susteren show, and Sunday morning, he spoke with Chris Wallace. When asked how long he'd be willing to let the standoffs go on, Walker responded that he is willing to take this as long as it takes. The comments on Wallace's show reflect actions taken by the governor on Friday, when he rejected an offer by state employee unions that would have seen employees accept all of Walker's economic proposals if he'd only let them preserve their right to collectively bargain. Walker said no. The protests continue to grow in the state, with an estimated 70,000 descending on the Capitol Saturday. The Capitol building itself has been occupied for nearly 7 days and nights straight, with protesters taking turns cleaning up the public spaces and local businesses donating food and water. This week, Walker also lost a strong ally in the form of the Wisconsin Law Enforcement Association. Executive Board President Tracy Fuller issued a statement saying the organization regrets their endorsement of Walker during the gubernatorial campaign. Friday saw Madison welcome AFL-CIO President Richard Trumka. Workers Independent News had the opportunity to sit down with Trumka and ask him his thoughts on what he was seeing in Wisconsin.
We've been docile for too long. And for 30 years they've been pushing us, taking away our wages, taking away our benefits, sending jobs overseas, I mean, and doing everything they can to cripple and kill the middle class. So this has been invigorating for me. The last time I saw anything like this was, I don't know if you know my background, I was president of the mine workers for 14 years, third generation miner. And we had a strike in Virginia, Kentucky, and West Virginia called Pittston. It was probably the last place where they've taken over a facility. We took over a prep plant, one of the giant prep plants down there. And it just started growing because people believed in it. That fight was over health care for retirees and widows. This company thought that the active miners wouldn't support their parents, their neighbors, their friends, that they would just say, okay, leave us alone and you can take the health care from retirees, and we wouldn't do that. Well, we had about a 15-month strike. Not a single one of the mine workers crossed the picket line. And we had support that just started growing. Yeah. Small business people, everybody came out because they knew if they could take our health care, they could take anybody. And that's what it is here.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You are listening to the best of the Rick Smith Show.
Your working class radio experience. Where hard work, common sense, and rational thought are a reality. The Rick Smith Show.
Working hard to make a living. Rich shit out of farm rent. Father, son, left the cameo. Blue dental, head is big. Oh, he's a working class man.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Here we are in Madison, Wisconsin, right on the front lines of the class war. This is the kind of stuff we're going to have to be talking about this summer, I think. But that's why we're here to begin that process, to show everyone, I guess, to show how it's done, because they're doing a great job here. I'm sitting here with Jeff Weiss, UFCW 1546 from Chicago. Jeff, thanks for taking time for me.
You're more than welcome.
What brings you here to Madison, Wisconsin from Chicago?
You know, when I got the call to volunteer to come up here to Wisconsin, it was a no-brainer. This is history in the making. I've seen a lot of labor rallies in my time, and this is the one I wanted to be at. When I heard there was 20,000 on the first day, 30,000 the next day, 40,000, keep building, I wanted to be part of that. I'm up here, and I'm supporting all of the public workers who need a voice on the job.
You know, for those of us, and I'll put you probably in the same category, who looked at our labor history, to kind of dictate the future. I see this as this generation's PATCO. When the president fired all the PATCO workers, the response that came out of that was not what I thought sufficient. I'm looking at what Governor Walker's doing. This is a response.
You know, when we had rallies last year in Chicago about Wall Street, you know, we're fighting all the corporate greed and everything, and I thought that was going to be the moment. We were going to have workers finally go against the big banks, go against Wall Street. It didn't really happen. But you're right. This is what's mobilizing all workers. And I think it's because it's just so transparent what the governor is trying to do here.
Absolutely.
You know, with Wall Street, maybe you would say, well, you know, I don't know if they were really going after the Main Street, even though they were. Here, I think workers, both union and non-union, can see that this is just a blatant attack on labor unions, on workers, on the middle class. And it's resonating, and it's exciting.
You know, when this first cracked, when this first all first broke, what I said is I believed the spark was that moment, because I do believe people only really act at the bottom of Maslow's hierarchy, if you will. But people only react when they're threatened. And when Walker came out and said, I'm going to call in the National Guard to keep them in line, or whatever the phrase he used was. I think at that moment, on a visceral level, every working person who heard that goes, wait a minute, that's me he's talking about.
You know, for me, and I've had some conversations with some of my friends and coworkers, and even some people who are not union supporters. And as soon as I brought up, you know, first I brought up, well, I'm going to join the protest here in Wisconsin, and you get the kind of smirks and stuff like, oh, you're the liberal unionist going up with your labor union people. But as soon as I brought up the fact that the governor ginned up the budget, you know, and gave a legitimate, this is coming out of the New York Times reporting on this, I had some non-union, strong conservative Republican people start saying, you know what, I think I'm on your side here. This is just not right.
So when I look at the handful of Tea Party people who are here, you know, to kind of gin up trouble, I honestly believe that this is in line with the worldview that they espouse, even if they know it. If they don't know it, you know what I mean? At some point you go, this is what you've been screaming about. This is what you're angry about. Why are you on the wrong side of this issue?
You know what? I actually like to see the Tea Party people here. I like to see the Republicans start telling exactly what they're doing, because a lot of people are now seeing the true colors of the Republican Party. They're seeing the true colors of the Tea Party, the true colors of the right-wing media, the Rush Limbaughs, the Sarah Palins. They are finally seeing what they are talking about in reality, and how it's affecting workers. And, you know, go for it. Be as radical as you want, because we're finally waking up to the fact that this is not our America.
You know, you brought up Rush Limbaugh there for a second, and, you know, I thought of the phrase he used. What was it? Yeah, the teachers are parasites? Was that the word he used?
I think he said bottom feeders. And
again, you know, I think of all the teachers I've had over the years, and while, you know, having gone to Catholic school, I have some problems with the nuns I had, but most of the teachers I've had, good, solid, decent people, A, wanting to do the best for me as a student, and B, trying to make a reasonable living.
You know, this is what I don't get is, you know, when there's so much hatred that's being spewed by some of the media, and actually the people that are listening to the media, what I don't understand is that these are workers too. You know, I had I saw on a blog post somebody put up the salaries of all the teachers in Wisconsin. You know, trying to make it
we got the same thing by
trying to make it look like these teachers are making, you know, a fortune off of our tax dollars. You know what I would say to those people is, I'd like to see your salaries posted on the website.
I've asked that question.
Because you know what, if they work for a company that I'm paying for, let's say Comcast or AT&T, and I want to see their salary, I would say, you know what, knock down your salary, because my costs are too high and I want them lowered. That's all they're saying for them too. And I just don't get the hatred. It's just gotten out of control.
Absolutely out of control. You know, in our area, one of the Tea Party Tinky Tank, the Commonwealth Foundation, they posted all of this teacher salaries, and I actually thanked them for that, because then I actually see how little my children's teachers make.
And people think, you know, somebody who's makes $60,000 a year, first of all, that teacher's probably been working for 20 years, and $60,000 is not what it used to be back then. I don't know too many people who can, you know, live on that kind of money and send their kids to college. And again, we're talking about the middle class. I don't want to even bring up a number for salary. It's just we want the middle class to start reaping the rewards that they work hard for.
Well, here's what I don't understand, and I've had this conversation a number of times on the program. I don't understand this mentality of I'm not doing well. My paycheck isn't that great. I don't have health care. I don't have a pension. But that guy over there, he does. So I don't want him to have it. I want to take those things from him so that he's as miserable as I am. That, to me, is a... And maybe it's my union background. Maybe it's the fact that, you know, early on I was able to join a union and bargain for better wages, hours, and conditions, and demand some of the better things. Maybe that's my mentality.
I've seen it too. I actually have family members that pose that argument to me all the time. You know, I didn't have health care when I worked. I didn't have a pension. And I would say, well, don't you want that? Wouldn't you want that for others? And it just doesn't hit. But I think this time right now with everybody talking about it and having thousands and thousands of people rallying, I think people are starting to get it.
What I see this as, and I'm hoping it doesn't pass, I'm seeing this as a major opportunity for education of people who, I'll tell you a quick story. Mm-hmm. I went to the local high school. As I said, I was a 21-year member of the Teamsters Union, wearing my Teamsters jacket with the horses on. The kid walks up to me, goes, so where do you work with horses. Where do you ride? Completely void of any historical knowledge of the Teamsters Union, good, bad, indifferent, whatever. Just not there at all.
Yeah, I get that too. You know, you get the comment, labor had its place. You know, back in the early 1900s, even the 50s, but it's done with. And I think and I hope that this is re-educating people that we're not done with. And once you see all this stuff being taken away from workers, people are going to realize that we want this back.
Yeah, and you know, just because we're not seeing people dying in the streets doesn't mean people aren't dying on the job. Doesn't mean that, you know, I read a statistic, you know, 50,000 people a year die of occupational illnesses. We just don't see it because we've done such a nice job of sanitizing that picture. And we've done such a good job of putting people into the shadows. This unemployment thing in Pennsylvania, you know, with all the people unemployed, we no longer go to the unemployment office to fill out unemployment forms. Everything's done on the computer to where people are just shunned away. They're in their homes, they're in the shadows, and we don't think about them.
I think you say it exactly the way it is, that people just need to realize that, you know, unions are not about just wages. And the more we can tell the story about protecting our members' lives and helping them achieve a secure retirement and dignity on the workplace beyond the wages, the more people will start to understand that, hey, I'd like a union too.
And the thousands of people who are here in Madison, Wisconsin, the tens of thousands of people who are screaming and chanting and carrying on tonight, the big concert. The Street Dogs and Tom Morello are going to be here. They're calling for 100,000 people to be here. That to me, Jeff, is momentous. It's historical. It's the reason we're here.
It's a beautiful thing.
Jeff Weiss, I appreciate your time. Thanks so much. We're going to take a quick break. Right back after this. This is the Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Smith Show, changing America for the better.
I'm David Filmon, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. Chances are you may never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, inspecting an elevator, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org.
Bringing sanity and
rational thought back to America. Rick Smith.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here. We are in Madison, Wisconsin. This has just been an amazing day. The people we've seen, the stuff that we've been able to be a part of. This is absolute history in the making, and I give these people all the credit in the world. And one of our listeners wanted to chime in from Florida. He writes, "I live in Florida, and I'm sure you know we have Governor Skinhead cutting programs here. Florida is a right-to-work state, and there are a few unions down here. I just want to say how proud I am of the Wisconsinites. Godspeed to them. They are heroes to me." And, you know, I don't know that the folks who are out here marching in the streets would call themselves heroes, but I think they understand how historic this is. Given the history of labor, given the history of this state, and their prominence in the whole movement.
You know, the people that you meet, I think you kind of touched on it before. Everybody you meet, they're just average people. They're just people who go to work every day, who are the heart and soul and the sinew of this country. They are the kind of people who you would be proud to call sons and daughters and neighbors, and they're out here by the tens of thousands, and. I mean, it's an experience I don't think I'll ever forget. You know, we hope that they win. We think they can win. But you have to admire them and just meeting them and talking to them. You even above the issues as human beings, you have nothing but the greatest respect for these people.
Well, the reality is I do believe they've already won. Reports that I've heard, early reports tomorrow morning, the New York Times, I guess, is going to be reporting that Scott Walker's approval ratings are somewhere in the high 30 range and going down. So, you know, hey, Scott, keep doing what you're doing. Keep it up. And maybe if you work hard enough at screwing people over, maybe, just maybe, you'll be down there with the bush. You'll be down there with the little shrub at the bottom there. Because, look, at the end of it, people woke up about Trump. People realized that, you know, he wasn't the everyday guy that they thought he was. They wasn't the guy we're going to go have a beer with. And this guy's not either. This guy Walker is not that your next door neighbor buddy either. He's somebody who would rip your heart out and laugh as you died, I believe.
Well, talking to some people, you get to know this guy. You talk to local politicos that have been involved for some time, decades around here, and you find out that, you know, he was just another conservative, nothing special about him, and all of a sudden he gets some power, all of a sudden he gets some money behind him, and all of a sudden he's doing what the moneyed interest want him to do.
You know, but at the end of the day, the messaging that's been around this, and all you're seeing on TV is it's about the money. It's because these greedy workers, they won't take pay cuts. Even though we see reports, Wall Street's back, the share prices are up. Today, the USA Today, and I'm still, the irony of that, for the wealthy, luxury is back. At a time when you're talking about stealing from these people, it doesn't make a lot of sense to me. But again, you know, it comes back to this idea that somehow spreading the wealth is socialism. You know, the tea twizzlers, they just loved Harper. Well, you want to redistribute wealth. Yeah, you know, much in the same manner that it was redistributed away from us, I would like to have it redistributed back. And there's that loss of understanding there. But, you know, spreading the wealth somehow, that's socialism. But spreading the pain to us at the bottom, that's patriotic. You know, we're all tightening our belt for the good of the country. Yet, as I understand it, here in Wisconsin, they gave away about $140 million to the very top. You look at right before Christmas, how much did we have to give away to the wealth class just to get a little bit of extension in unemployment benefits? We had to hand off the Bush-Obama tax cuts because now Obama bought these. He had the opportunity to stop these insane handouts. He chose not to. And the Democrats chose not to. For me, at some point, you got to go, it's a tough time. We need to tighten our belt. Or as George Bush said, tighten our belt. See, we tighten the belt, and we do so much better. But tighten it for everybody. You know, when I see stories, luxury is back. Luxury is back. People are buying, you know, $600,000 cars and all of the cutlery that I saw knives for $15,000 a piece. I'm going, really? Is this where we're going with this? Yeah, we got people who are eating with plastic silverware.
I know one guy who didn't pay $600,000 for his new car.
Yeah, well, I can afford what I can afford, man.
I know. You're a working class guy. If I can say one thing, you know, another thing about this whole scenario that very few people are mentioning. You know, these workers worked hand in hand with the leadership from the governor's office, the previous contract, and gave back substantial give back so that the budget could be balanced so that the people of Wisconsin didn't face a real heavy tax increase. We don't hear that. All we hear about is the greedy side, not to mention about, and I wished I had my numbers with me, some of the figures that when you really do some investigations, you find out how much less these public sector workers make as compared to the private sector. And the more skilled you are, the more education it requires, the more important your job is, the greater the disparity in wages. So these people on so many fronts are really getting the short end of the thrift. They're not getting their just due. They're also not getting credit for working hand in hand with the governor, the last contract, and doing what they needed to do to preserve their jobs and to be fair to the taxpayers. They don't even talk about it in the national media.
No, and going back to that, you look at the reality is, up until they decided, you know, this governor decided to hand out a bunch of money, they were okay. It wasn't until he said, here's a big gift to those who put me into power, and we're going to take it from those people. Again, going back to this idea of why is it that somehow spreading the spoils, the gains, the enormous profits, spreading that amongst all the people who created that massive wealth, somehow that is socialism and it's bad. We cannot have that. But somehow, you know, again, spreading this massive pain, of course, you know, just sprinkling it across the top of you and I who work for a living, somehow that's patriotic. I'm still not getting that. And I wish some of our T. Twizzler friends would explain it to me, because I remember having these conversations before the last election, predicting most of the stuff that's going on right now. If you hand all the levers of power over to people like Mr. Walker and like the Republicans in a number of states, you're going to get their pro-business agenda. And we had talked about that pretty much all the way through the election season. This idea of a business government is ridiculous. And, you know, you look at Walker saying, well, you know, we just want to give the local municipalities and the local government the tools so that they can run their government like a business. Well, if that's the case, then the idea is to lay off as many workers as possible, not get things done, you know, hold off on paving roads, hold off on a lot of the things that you and I expect, cut days for trash collection, cut to save money. It's not about service. It's not about the community. It's not about making this a better place to live. It's about saving money and putting it in your pocket. So, you know, to bring this home, as we move down the road, this fight that they're having right now in Wisconsin is just not a fight for the people here of Wisconsin. This is a fight for people across the country. In the free states, if you will, the states that have collective bargaining rights, and there are several that do not have bargaining rights for public sector workers, so a couple of states that won't allow teachers to collectively bargain. And I got to be honest, the more I look at this, this is taking us back. This is taking us back 100 years politically. This is going to take us back to the days of the party bosses, and maybe that's what the Republicans want. Maybe what they're seeing is that opportunity for control forever. Because when we go back to the good old days, you know, the good old days when a new government takes over and they wipe out all those other public workers and they bring in their cronies, you know, patronage jobs, going back to the good old days. What do you think that's going to do to our services? What do you think it's going to do to our tax structure? And amazingly, the same people who tell us that they don't believe in government, that, you know, they don't want it, are the very people who are going to be running it and running it into the ground. So that's kind of the idea here. This idea of returning to the good old days where there really isn't a middle class anymore, where there are the owners, the handful of people at the very, very top, the folks who all of the reward seems to be bestowed upon, and then the people who toil, the people who scurry for the crumbs that fall off the table. You know, not the trickle down that they promised us, because, you know, they promised us rivers of gold and honey and, well, this is terrestrial radio. I can't go that far. But, you know, they did. They promised us rivers of gold and honey, and the trickle would come down upon us if all we had to do was give this money to the very wealthy. I've been trickled on, all right. And it's been a yellow stream. But it's not. It's not gold and honey. Not at all. It's gold and something. But it is not gold and honey. And we better wake up quick, and I'm hoping, you know, as John Nichols said earlier, I'm hoping that this is exported from Wisconsin and this gets to Ohio in the next couple of days, in the next week. This gets to Pennsylvania. This gets to Missouri, New Hampshire, all of the states that are under attack right now, all of the states where workers are facing this assault. And that's really what it is. It's an assault on their way of life. It's assault on their future. And if you don't think it affects you, you've got another thing coming. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with our good friend Frank M. Speck from Workers Independent News. Stick around. This is the Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Making the blue blood see red. The Rick Smith Show.
It's always interesting to see Congress in action, though interesting can also be appalling. For example, what a sight it was to watch the new Republican leaders as they gleefully repealed last year's law extending health care coverage to all Americans. As they voted one by one to kill it, their mantra was, no to big government health care. What you couldn't see, however, was them later slipping down the hallways of the Capitol to a little-known exclusive medical office that gives them free health care, paid for by the same big government they were just ranting about. You might think that such raw hypocrisy would cause them to feel at least a twinge of moral discomfort, but apparently they've been immunized to prevent such outbreaks of morality. A good illustration of the congressional mindset is presently making the rounds on the Internet. Called The Haircut, it tells the story of a barber who cut the hair of a florist, but refused to take payment from the flower peddler. "I'm doing community service this week," he explained. The next morning, when the barber went to his shop, he found a thank you note and a dozen roses at his door. His next customer was a police officer needing a trim. Again, the barber declined any payment. The next morning, he found a thank you note and a dozen donuts waiting for him, a gift from the grateful cop. Then, lo and behold, a congressman came in for a haircut. When he tried to pay, the barber once more waved off the money, repeating his commitment to community service. The lawmaker was delighted by this generous gesture. And sure enough, when the barber went to his shop the next morning, he was greeted by another surprise. A dozen Congress critters lined up waiting for a free haircut. This is Jim Hightower saying, see, it's just a matter of one's moral makeup. Assuming, of course, that you have a moral makeup.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at HightowerLowdown.org.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show here in Madison, Wisconsin, home of the, well, what I'm saying, this is the front line of the class war. This is where it begins. Either we fight and win here, or this becomes the steamroller downhill. I don't know if you saw the story in Texas, where the steamroller, the bulldozer, seemed to lose control and plow into about seven homes and just took it right out. That's what's going to happen if we cannot slow this roll. You're going to see this just steamroll across the free states, those states that still have the right to collectively bargain and have a voice on the job. I'm telling you, it's coming. It is absolutely coming unless we support the folks here in Wisconsin. I'm telling you, here it goes. I'm sitting here with Dr. Frank Emspeck, a good friend of ours, and also the man who brings us those wonderful win clips at the top of every hour. Frank, thanks for sitting down with me.
Oh, thank you. It's a pleasure. This is an exciting time here. I wanted to just address a couple of different things. First of all, our federation, our South Central Federation of Labor, is meeting tonight. Nobody has called in yet. One of the discussions is to have a one-day general work stoppage, perhaps, throughout the state to discuss what it would be like if people stopped work. So I don't know exactly how that motion is going. It was proposed by a number of people this evening, and I don't know where it is in the process. It's possible somebody will be able to call in before the show is over or come visit. They know where we are, and I've asked them to come by. So if not tonight, tomorrow night for sure.
That'd be terrific.
That's an amazing thing. But here's what was troubling me. I'm in my mid-60s, and I keep hearing on the radio and I watch CNN and NPR and everything. They're talking about protesters. For those people of my age, we think of protesters as these hairy people who were aggravated about the war in Vietnam, maybe not quite patriotic, even though a lot of that's disappeared. And I'm thinking, I don't want to be a protester. I've been over there at the Capitol every day for a week. I'm not protesting. I'm a citizen. I'm a citizen of the state. I'm a citizen of the country. I'm a citizen. I'm a citizen who's inspired by democracy. And when I talk to people there, we've interviewed hundreds of people in the last week, and we've this show may be able to play our clip with the high school kids that we interviewed. They were inspired. They weren't there protesting. They were saying, we want to have a nation where there are rights, where people are treated respectfully, where we can do what we want to and do so within an environment of, I think, a positive view. So it's not so much protesting. It's being inspired. It's coming out there. So I think in terms of talking to people about this, we'd be better off if we start talking about citizens, because it's the citizens of the state of Wisconsin and of surrounding states that are out there saying, as citizens, we have rights, and we are here to protect those rights, to extend those rights. Now, earlier this afternoon, we got a call from somebody who said, what's collective bargaining? Because a lot of the discussion is, unions are out there defending collective bargaining. Well, collective bargaining is a notion where we, workers, can talk to they, the bosses, as equals. There's a whole law that says all that. So collective bargaining allows individuals to come together, make a point, and legally be able to express it. And it's that fundamental right, that fundamental freedom of association, the freedom of speech. Those are the things that the Walker administration and those in Ohio, Pennsylvania, Indiana, Texas, Alabama, and Michigan, among others. It's those rights, those basic fundamental rights, that's what's at stake here.
Yeah, and I absolutely agree. And that's why I've been saying this is ground zero right now. If you can slow it down, maybe you slow it in those other states as well. And maybe we do, as John Nichols said earlier in the program, export this activism to where, as you've rightly said, these citizens go to their capitals and have their voices heard by their elected leaders.
Well, we know something is being exported in this sense. We just got off the phone about an hour ago or 2 hours ago with Indiana, and there's going to be some kind of activity there. But here's where we're going. I got another call. We got lots of calls here from Alabama. And the great state of Alabama, where, in fact, the Civil Rights Movement began with Martin Luther King in 1956 with the Montgomery bus boycott, they've recently passed a law that makes it illegal for individuals to solicit union dues on state property. They've already abolished the idea of the dues checkoff and that you could just take it out of your check. Now it means that anybody that we know goes on state property, they work for the union, and ask a member, would you make your contribution or pay this week, and you can be arrested. So we're talking about the fundamental destruction of freedom of association here. And so what I hear out there at the Capitol, and there are thousands of people there tonight, it's a sense that we are inspired by a vision of democracy, and we're going to be out here and defend it.
You know, I saw a woman walking with a sign, and she had the sign written, the little Pastor Niemöller quote. You know, first they came for the communists, and I said nothing because I wasn't. And then they came for the trade unionists, and she had, and why do you think that was? Because, you know, these are people who generally speak up and generally demand that their rights be heard. And I got to be honest, I'm proud of the fact that A, I was a union member, and B, that I'm here to witness this moment.
The unions enable that. If you're an individual in this country, most people, I think, are unclear what this is, but most people are what you call an employee at will. And the will is the will of the employer, and you can be fired as long as it isn't for certain discriminatory things like age or sex or whatever, whenever the employer wants. What the union does, it brings a sense of fairness, and with a sense of fairness and equality, it brings in a decency that most people in Wisconsin have.
You know, I'll take that a step further because, you know, we've been talking about this concept of having business-friendly government and running the government like a business. And if you look at the private sector and how employers have been able to squash any organizing, been able to really have a firm grip on the workforce, I think, you know, you look at this. There's no thinking about it. You look at this. That's what they want.
You look at
will state employees so they can return to the good old days of the patronage jobs and handing it out to
their
buddies.
There's all that. But you asked me before, because I am a historian, about some of this. Well, let's take a look at the two periods in American history when the government was run like a business. The first one resulted in the 1890s with the collapse of the American economy for 13 years, a 10-year depression. And finally, around 1900, it began to pull out. The second time was the late 20s, which resulted in a depression where only World War II pulled us out. So when business was running the country as business, it destroyed the standard of living of most working people, and that's where we're going here. So from my point of view, when you look at businesses, what I see is greed and poor planning and destruction, not growth, and certainly not a standard of living that most people can be proud of. Aside from that, Rick is right. The times when we did not have civil service, and most of these unions come out of a movement to strengthen civil service. What was civil service? Civil service said, if you're doing your job and you're not stealing and you're doing what the people want, you should keep your job, not be fired every once in a while. And they also said that you're going to be measured by the quality of your work. Now, that's a pretty simple thing, and if you can do that, then you can might stay there for your whole life or a lot of part of your life or whatever. And because a pension are deferred wages, you'll be able to retire with some form of dignity. That's a perfectly, you know, normal thing to do. You give your life to your society, and when you get ready to retire, you're able to do so without starving to death. That's not a big, difficult concept. What we've seen, however, is that running the country as a business meant, oh, the businesses say, I'm not responsible for people's pensions anymore. I've stolen them, you know, so I've got what I need. We'll put them in the stock market. And, hey, tough luck if the stock market drops and you don't have a pension. That's not the kind of society anybody really wants. But what we're seeing here is it's being driven down people's throats. And people in this state, and I think people in the upper Midwest and throughout the whole United States, are beginning to say, enough is enough. And again, it's a question of citizens coming together, exercising their freedom of association and free speech to defend those systems of freedom and the Constitution that we have in the workplace, but only in the unionized workplaces.
Yeah, you bring up an interesting point. You know, the citizens going to their government, to redress of their grievances and all of that. And it sounds great, but, you know, the police union president here today said that, you know, if Walker says kick everybody out, use force, don your riot gear, whatever, they're going to do it, and the power of the state will come down upon these folks, mostly families, people with children, and a lot of young people. And I got to be honest, this is the nicest bunch of people I've ever been around at what could be characterized as a protest. I won't characterize it, because as you pointed out aptly, these are citizens.
Well, I think that's true. For those of us who have been involved in legal activities, strikes and other things like that, sometimes standing up for one's rights, standing up for what is right, standing up for freedom of speech, sometimes means that you get clubbed in the head. Now, we saw this in Egypt, where the people are building democracy. And I suppose here in Wisconsin, if the governor is absolutely determined to tear it down, he's going to have to do the same thing that Mubarak did, which is trying to beat people in the head. I think people are not going to tolerate that. This is our state. This is our capital. This is our building. And it's true people may get pushed around for a while. It's true that the government can pass certain laws. But it's also true that the history in this state, and the history, in fact, throughout the whole country, is when people finally look up and say, you know, we're going to get together and we're going to work collectively for our ends, they've been successful. It's taken 30 years of constant right-wing propaganda, undermining, and the purchase of the electoral system with the Citizens United decision, which treats a corporation as a person, except, incidentally, when it comes to murder. So in the Massey coal disaster, corporations aren't charged with murder. They're just fined. Unfortunately, there are some dead people, but they're all minors. I haven't heard any of the corporations say, I want to be treated as a person when it comes to criminality. But when it comes to buying elections, they want to be people just like everybody else, except they happen to have billions of dollars. So we have a purchased government. And again, that's the kind of thing that I think that most people are uncomfortable with. And they're going to see it here in Wisconsin, where we have a purchased government, purchased by out-of-state interests. And now people are saying, we don't want that. We're not going to tolerate that.
When we come back, I want to talk a little bit about the Koch brothers and the Tea Party movement, because I think that for me, and when we come back, I want to talk about this a little bit more. But for me, when the Tea Party first came onto the scene and we first started seeing reports of it, I was right there. I'm angry. Our jobs have been outsourced. Our pensions are slashed in half. Our standard of living is falling. I was right there, ready to be angry and to begin to fight back.
You still
it's when they
angry.
Took this weird. It, took this
you're
weird.
Still, you're still angry.
I am angry, but I'm talking about in the context of the Tea Party. I wasn't willing to make that leap, this anti-government, anti-we the people approach that they took. So we're going to take a quick break right back after this. This is the Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Covering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham. The AFL-CIO Executive Council meeting in Houston, Texas, says in a policy statement that broad-based wage growth in the U.S. is the defining challenge of our time. According to the Economic Policy Institute, since 1997, 100% of the wage growth in the American economy has gone to the top 10% of the income structure. The bottom 90% has seen income decline, adjusted for inflation. The AFL-CIO says working people have the opportunity to shape the national conversation on this issue in ways that would really help workers win real economic improvements and build the true working class movement. The AFL-CIO says economic inequality did not just happen accidentally or by an act of God. The Labor Federation says it's the predictable result of decisions made by people with power. over the past generation. Those decisions can be reversed. The key decision, the AFL-CIO says, was to use the power of government to help corporate America push down wages by destroying workers' collective bargaining power. The AFL-CIO says the purpose of the labor movement is to give voice to working people so we can improve our lives. And the principle that all working people should share in the wealth we create through rising wages has always been at the heart of the American labor movement. Democratic National Committee Chair Debbie Wasserman Schultz was in Wisconsin Wednesday highlighting Republican governor scandals and pledging to work with Wisconsin's Democratic Party in the effort to defeat union-busting Governor Scott Walker.
I'm here in the state today to focus on raising the resources that Democrats will need to be successful and to beat Scott Walker and elect Mary Burke, governor of this state, and we're looking forward to working with the Wisconsin Democratic Party the whole rest of the way through this election.
There is a second John Doe criminal probe underway in at least five Wisconsin counties focused on Walker's campaign and right-wing groups that supported him during his recall election. The first John Doe resulted in convictions of some top Walker staffers.
Just like the wizard, when he asked people to pay no attention to the man behind the curtain, Republican governors are trying to get people to ignore the failed Republican leadership in Washington. You've got Chris Christie, Bob McDonnell, and now Scott Walker, who are mired in scandal. Scott Walker has senior staff in jail. It is unfathomable to me that you would have your senior staff that engaged in unethical activity, and you would have absolutely no idea what's going on.
WNET, the New York affiliate of PBS, is returning a $3.5 million grant to a former Enron executive who first gave the money to sponsor an anti-pension series. David Sirota at Panda Daily says billionaire John Arnold paid for a two-year PBS news series called Pension Peril. Sirota says the series promotes the billionaire corporate agenda of cutting public worker pensions. WNET says production on the series is suspended indefinitely.
Workers Independent News is brought to you with support from union-owned, union-represented Bank of Labor. Bank of Labor has provided trust and fiduciary services to labor organizations for nearly a century. Online at bankoflabor.com.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Organizing America 3 hours each night. The Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out our website at therickSmithShow.com. We're not taking phone calls tonight. Little technical problem. We're working on it. Hopefully tomorrow everything will be up and running. But you can contact us, Rick at therickSmithShow.com. Dick writes, help, kill the bill. Help kill the bill. He writes me, thanks for the work you do. And I got to say, thanks for the work that you're doing and helping to kill this bill, because I don't want to see this become the steamroller that gets out of hand and ends up crushing all of us. Troubled times if that happens. I'm sitting here with Dr. Frank Emspeck, the man who brings us the Workers Independent News, the nice wind clips at the top of the hour. Frank, I appreciate you sticking around for us.
Well, it's nice to be here. You know, you talked about the Tea Party. I think one of the most phenomenal things about it is they've never said who is exporting the jobs. The government isn't exporting them. The companies that are paying for the Tea Party are exporting them. And that's the real enemy. And I think what we really need to talk about when we think about what's happening is who. It's like jobs are exported. Well, it's not like, you know, it comes from heaven. Who is exporting those jobs? Who is making that money? And where is it going? And I think it would help all of us clarify a little bit what's going on if we think about it. I'm not exporting the jobs. Rick isn't exporting the jobs. Nobody in the room here is exporting them. So who is? And what we find is the very companies that are talking about big government are the ones moving the work to some other country and undercutting things. And if we don't see that relationship, then we're not going to know who we're fighting and who the enemy is and what has to change in order for us to move forward. And my little example is only this. Since about 1970, productivity has doubled. What's productivity, you may ask? That's how much people produce per hour. So we're producing almost twice as much wealth in every hour we work, but we all seem to be falling behind and poorer. And think about that. Wages for most working people stagnated in the last 30 years.
Correct.
People have been able to maintain family income because more people are working.
And more, the wives have gone, husbands have
listen,
gone.
Listen, the dog, if the dog could deliver the newspapers, the dog would be working, you know.
And they've given us these wonderful things, that these wonderful plastic things that fit neatly in our wallet.
Right, that too. But every aspect of our life we're paying. We're paying on the pension, we're paying on the health care, we're paying for this and that. So our money is disappearing. Where is it going? And I think when you look at it and you say the top 10,000 families in this country have gotten all of this huge increase in wealth, and they're not investing it in this country. They're investing it all around the world and saying, well, we can get this stuff produced somewhere else. We'll take your money that you've earned and invest it somewhere else and drive you out of a job because they're not interested in our jobs. They're interested in their money. And I think when we talk about the Tea Party people being so mad and so angry and so upset, the one missing ingredient is that they turn to their fellow worker and blame them rather than turning to the people with the cash and saying, gee, General Electric closed 26 plants from the time Obama got elected until the time that Jeffrey Immelt was appointed as the job czar here a couple of months ago. They closed 26 plants. There are more people making light bulbs in Hungary for GE than there are in the United States, which, of course, if you come from Pennsylvania, so Cleveland is my comparison here. Cleveland was this huge Hungarian community in the 1900s, right up, and that's probably still. What was their major, what were they doing there? They were making light bulbs for GE. Once GE could move back to Hungary, they impoverished Cleveland and moved back to Hungary. So what we see are these major companies taking our work, the wealth we've produced, and saying, sayonara. Oh, incidentally, big government. Big government's the problem. Why? Because they can stop us from taking this money and leaving the country. So we have to be clear as to where we're going here and who to be mad at. But I don't think we can really make that happen until we have these basic democratic rights, fight for them, the right to organize, the right to keep our unions, the right to collectively express our vision.
Small d Democratic, of course.
Small d Democratic.
Because, you know, a lot of this, I got to be honest, the Democratic Party has not always been the friend of the working person. I look at NAFTA. I look at, as you pointed out, President Obama made I Melt the job czar, so to speak, when he's been one of the biggest outsourcers.
I worked at GE for 11 years, and I was working in the plant that made aircraft instruments, which is now in Mexico. And so hopefully, since these are the things that keep the planes in the air, everybody is bilingual in the plant. It's unlikely. But, you know, that's what happens. Anyway, here's a major and important technological part of our economy, Gonzo. And that was done under GE. Just like with the manufacture of some of the most sophisticated turbines now in the world, some are made here, but most are made in GE plants elsewhere.
Well, I look at some, when most airlines need major overhaul work done on their planes, where do they send them?
Mexico, Germany.
And Ethiopia.
Well, you know, my grandparents started work at GE in 1905, and somebody in the family has worked at GE pretty much from 1905 until I left in 1988. There was about 10 years when nobody was there. And, you know, we built, as I said to the company once when they were yelling at me because I was negotiating with them and I just accused them of treason and handed out this leaflet. They were aggregated. I don't know why. But they said, you know, who are you? That's not quite the way they put it, but they had some expletives in the air and so forth. And I said, well, I represent people in this place and I work here. And they said, who do you think you are? And I said, you know, this is my company. Our family built this company, not you, and you're the people destroying it. And I really feel that way about when we look at the companies, the wealth, the light bulbs, whatever it is, we have done that. And if we're going to keep these jobs and we're going to keep our standard of living, then we have to fight for it. And this thing in Wisconsin is part of that fight. It isn't just the public sector. The police and firefighters were very clear here. They said, if they get rid of you guys, we're next, whatever the governor says. And we all know that this has been made possible because of this huge destruction of the private sector unions. That preceded it. And now the people who hate working people, who hate organized working people, feel they can go in for the kill. And I don't think it's going to happen.
Well, I mean, this is the stuff that they've been whispering to each other in their little think tanks and in their little clubs for a couple of generations now. And now they feel emboldened. And what we're seeing back is you're seeing the pushback. And it started terrifically with the young people who came out and said, we're just not going to allow this to happen. And I see this, you know, you're an educator. I see this as that moment for labor to take this momentum, this energy, and point it in a positive direction. You know, maybe go back and explain labor's history a little bit, and maybe, you know, try and fight back against the right-wing meme that, well, you know, labor, well, we needed them years ago, but we don't need them anymore.
Well, I think when we think about what's happening, the notion that the haves are people with a job and people with a pension and people with medical care, and the have-nots are other working people who don't have that, is just loony. The haves are the richest 1% in this country that are controlling it, and the have-nots are practically everybody else. And those that still have something amongst us have-nots are losing it rapidly. I think we really need to look at our world around us and be honest with ourselves and say, look, folks, in the past, we began to work together. That's why we have a union. We are for fairness. We are for moving forward. We're for being able to feed our families. And those are pretty basic things. Most people get it. And understand that unless we, as Benjamin Franklin said, to pick an old historian, right, unless we hang together, he said this during the Declaration of Independence meetings, he said, unless we hang together, we're going to hang separately. And that's what's going to happen here. And I go back to Tom Paine. All the newspapers I've ever printed are based on Tom Paine. He was a great American revolutionary. He was a writer, an author, and basically liked to write leaflets. He liked a lot of them. But his two papers were The Crisis and Common Sense. And I believe that in this crisis, we need the kind of common sense he talked about. Look at our world, get together, identify the enemy, and go for it.
And we know who the enemy is.
I hope.
I hope. You know, but you talk about the folks who are doing very well. And I was reading USA Today, who write on the cover here, front page, for the wealthy, luxury is back. And they talk about $90,000 bicycles and $525,000 watches and $245,000 cars and $600,000 cars. And the wealthy have
that's more than our budget.
Cash. I mean, just one outfit here could solve your budget problems, and this would be all wiped away.
Well, you talked about the trickle-down theory, and you used one analogy. I used the horse. Not everybody has horses anymore, so probably people haven't seen it. But if you go look at horses and they eat oats, and then you go look at the birds, that's the trickle-down theory, and they get some of the oats at the end, of course, but not very many. And that's where we are, and we are in the trickle-down or trickled-on, depending on your analogy. I think we need to see this as a whole. It isn't just this person's pension. It isn't just this person's health care. It's that all of us, all working people, deserve a pension. We've worked for it. We've created wealth. We've moved stuff around. We've helped people. That's why we have pensions. The same as with health care. We have the single most expensive, least effective system in the world. It couldn't be designed to service fewer people with more money if somebody had worked at it. So we have to do those things. It's all in the pot here. And unions are the only organized group of people that can deal with them.
Yep, I absolutely agree with you. A report just came in. Evidently, the wireless access in the Capitol has been shut off, so there's no internet access there in the Capitol. So we're gonna keep an eye on that.
Do you know who shut it off?
Not yet. No one knows at this point. So we're keeping an eye on that. When we come back, we're going to talk with Mark Routon from the IBW, Local 159 here in Madison. He's been putting this whole event on Ustream so that somebody can see it. I mean, the mainstream media hasn't done it, so it's time. We're going to take a quick break. Right back after this.
For and by we the working people. The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to the best of the Rick Smith Show.
It's the Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You are listening to the best of the Rick Smith Show. Tonight's program is a look back 3 years ago today as the assaults in Wisconsin ramped up and it became apparent that workers' rights were under attack. This program is an important look back because it shows us how we got to where we are today. If you have any thoughts, any questions, any comments, we'd love to hear it. You can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Thanks for tuning in.
You're listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham. The AFL-CIO Executive Council meeting in Houston, Texas, says in a policy statement that broad-based wage growth in the U.S. is the defining challenge of our time. According to the Economic Policy Institute, since 1997, 100% of the wage growth in the American economy has gone to the top 10% of the income structure. The bottom 90% has seen income decline, adjusted for inflation. The AFL-CIO says working people have the opportunity to shape the national conversation on this issue in ways that would really help workers win real economic improvements and build the true working class movement. The AFL-CIO says economic inequality did not just happen accidentally or by an act of God. The Labor Federation says it's the predictable result of decisions made by people with power over the past generation. Those decisions can be reversed. The key decision, the AFL-CIO says, was to use the power of government to help corporate America push down wages by destroying workers' collective bargaining power. The AFL-CIO says the purpose of the labor movement is to give voice to working people so we can improve our lives. And the principle that all working people should share in the wealth we create through rising wages has always been at the heart of the American labor movement. Democratic National Committee Chair Debbie Wasserman Schultz was in Wisconsin Wednesday highlighting Republican governor scandals and pledging to work with Wisconsin's Democratic Party in the effort to defeat union-busting Governor Scott Walker.
I'm here in the state today to focus on raising the resources that Democrats will need to be successful and to beat Scott Walker and elect Mary Burke, governor of this state, and we're looking forward to working with the Wisconsin Democratic Party the whole rest of the way through this election.
There is a second John Doe criminal probe underway in at least five Wisconsin counties focused on Walker's campaign and right-wing groups that supported him during his recall election. The first John Doe resulted in convictions of some top Walker staffers.
Just like the wizard, when he asked people to pay no attention to the man behind the curtain, Republican governors are trying to get people to ignore the failed Republican leadership in Washington. You've got Chris Christie, Bob McDonnell, and now Scott Walker, who are mired in scandal. Scott Walker has senior staff in jail. It is unfathomable to me that you would have your senior staff that engaged in unethical activity, and you would have absolutely no idea what's going on.
WNET, the New York affiliate of PBS, is returning a $3.5 million grant to a former Enron executive who first gave the money to sponsor an anti-pension series. David Sirota at Panda Daily says billionaire John Arnold paid for a two-year PBS news series called Pension Peril. Sirota says the series promotes the billionaire corporate agenda of cutting public worker pensions. WNET says production on the series is suspended indefinitely.
Workers Independent News is brought to you with support from union-owned, union-represented Bank of Labor. Bank of Labor has provided trust and fiduciary services to labor organizations for nearly a century. Online at bankoflabor.com.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Time will change. Time to rearrange.
Keeping the chambers of commerce within their gated communities. The Rick Smith Show.
You can't tell me. We're gonna make it somehow. I heard a wise man say, revolution starts now. I think it's time for change. It's time to
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. We are here in Madison, Wisconsin. Kind of commandeered a hearing room where we've been talking to a bunch of people, having our own hearing, if you will. We're actually hearing some of the stories of the people who are in the crowd, some of the people who've testified here on what I'm calling the front line of the class war. I've got Mark Rowan, IBEW 159 Madison, Wisconsin member, sitting right here with me doing some great work here. Mark, thank you for taking time for me.
Thank you for having me.
I understand you yourself have a program that you put on, Ask the People.
Yes, sir. We're streaming it live on Ustream TV. The media, in my opinion, hasn't done a very good job of covering what's going on here. What we're doing is streaming it live. You can watch it, make your own opinion. If you think we're an angry mob or rioters, that's your opinion, but you're going to get it streamed live and the honest truth, not half-truths.
Yeah, I got to be honest. You know, when I looked at what was going on in Egypt, constant coverage. I could check in anytime I wanted. This, which I'm saying is the biggest labor-related event in my lifetime. This is what probably should have happened after Reagan fired the Patco workers. Didn't. This is that moment right now where my children are going to look back and go, "Dad, you screwed us over."
Right.
That you didn't do the right thing. But you're here trying to fill the void that the mainstream media has walked away from.
Yes, sir.
And we need this. We need to be able to see what's going on, because maybe some are going to try and say that there's, you know, they're rowdy people, or there's, you know, whatever.
Right.
What I've seen,
right,
probably the friendliest protest I've ever been to, the nicest people at a rally that I've ever met.
Right. Yeah, we are Madison, Wisconsin. You come here any time of year, and this is the attitude you get. When I packed my gear up and left the Capitol at about 10 o'clock last night, walking in the snowy streets, a woman pulled her car over and offered me a ride to her car. I didn't know her, never met her. She had no idea who I was. This is how Madison, Wisconsin is.
Yeah, I got to be honest. You know, at the end of this, though, going back to kind of thinking about a big mob and maybe some fear at the top, I don't know that you're going to nice Governor Walker to death.
No, I have no intention to nice Governor Walker to death. But one thing I would like to say that I have not heard a lot about, you can go on to Wisconsin Revenue, the Department of Revenue. Last year, major corporations, two-thirds of them paid $0 in taxes. Zero. Shouldn't we be asking for their tax money?
Absolutely. It's what we're talking about in Pennsylvania, 70%. They say Pennsylvania has the highest tax rate in the country, yet three-quarters of the companies pay zero.
Right. I pay property tax. I pay tax off my paycheck. You know, it's the sweat off my brow is how I earn my money, and these guys sit back and they're paying nothing. I mean, to me, that blew me away. And look it up. It's there.
It's right there. You know, here's the thing. You know, you said something interesting. Your money comes off the sweat of your brow. You work for it. I don't know that we value work in this country, especially when you look at the top rate for capital gains is 15%, where a guy who swings a hammer or wires homes for a living pays far more than that in taxes. What does that say about our value system? I love to hear my Republican friends say, "Well, we're the family values people. We're the moral people." Explain to me how sitting on a yacht drinking margaritas somehow is more valuable than a guy wiring my house.
Yeah, I have no idea. But if you're watching this in Madison, Wisconsin here, the only thing I disagree with is the workers. We value our work, and that's why we're here. We're out there. You know, Scott Walker wants to say this is about money. I've been here since Monday, and I've yet to hear somebody speak about money. You don't become a teacher to get rich. I have not met one rich teacher driving a Corvette or a brand new Cadillac. This morning I seen Scott Walker on TV, and, you know, he's speaking half truths. It irritates me, and I'm glad you're here. And this is the point of why, we're streaming this live. It blows my mind. He's giving half the story, and, you know, we're here to give it all.
Yeah, I got to be honest, though, for a Republican to give at least half the truth, that's a step forward. kind of a step forward.
Yeah, it's a start, but, you know, we do deserve more.
Let's talk about what you're doing, because I think what you guys are doing is great, providing a live video stream of what's going on here so people can see for themselves. Because as I said earlier, you know, if I wanted to see what was going on in Egypt 24 hours a day, I could pop right onto the news coverage that was going on and see what was going on in the square.
Mm-hmm.
Why aren't our news Why aren't our news people doing this? Well, why does a guy from IBEW 159 in Madison, Wisconsin, have to take his personal laptop, his personal computer, you know, his personal cameras, and do this?
You know, I don't know. Today I also found out the UW students have a website, defendwisconsin.org.
Right.
They cannot transmit out of the Capitol anymore. They have been listed as a porn site and have been blocked. They came up and borrowed my computer and had me try to log into their stuff, and they can't do it anywhere. And all they can figure out now is they're blocked. Also, like the public convenience receptacles in this building that are normally on are off. Little odd, you know, he's trying to make it rough. I understand he wants, this is war in his eyes, not to us. You know, we're just standing up for collective bargaining rights, what we want.
Let me ask you this. You're an IBEW member, 159 here in Madison, Wisconsin. What's this got to do with you? I mean, at the end of the day, you know, I have some listeners who say, well, why is he there? It doesn't affect him. It's those teachers. It's those public sector workers. You know, I have a friend that, you know, I can just hear him saying, well, you work for a living.
Mm-hmm.
Why would you defend them?
Well, they work for a living, too.
But that isn't what the media is telling us.
Well, the unions are very important. There's a lot of things people have forgotten. And, yeah, maybe we haven't done a lot lately, but we did bring you the 8-hour work day. The most important day, that one of the biggest celebrated holidays in the world is May 5th. Okay, that's Labor Day in every other country but here. And you know where that happened? Milwaukee, Wisconsin. It's called the Bayview Massacre. People marched for an 8-hour work day, 8-hour rest, and 8 hours for whatever they wanted. Because before unions, they worked 10 hours for one pay, and they were going to decide to make people work 12 hours for the same pay. You take away unions, which are your frontline defense for middle class, do you not think your overtime's going to go away? Do you not think that without the union backing you or sticking up for your rights, the business owner is going to just give you the money?
Well, there is that view that it's the benevolent corporation who gives me all these wonderful, they shower me with health care and with pensions and a living wage and safe working conditions. And it's just, you know, it's because they're decent, good people.
Right, yeah.
No, I'm not saying there are some that are decent.
I agree. But they don't give their money out. No. I understand that. You're in business to make money. And when you make money, greed, you want to make more money. All right, that's the point of a union. You have somebody representing you, saying, you know, no. You make lots of money. We know you're making profits. You know, like I like to tell people, you get rid of unions and our wage goes down, and I go out there and wire that building for $10 less an hour or $15 less an hour. When you go patronize that store and he got cheaper wages to build that building, do you think his goods and services are going to be cheaper? No, he's going to take that money and put it in his pocket and laugh all the way to the bank. They're going to take any amount they can get. And I understand it. I understand. I mean, that's business.
That's how it is.
And that's why we need collective bargaining rights, because we do understand how businesses run. And without it, we're going to be lost. It's going to get worse. I mean, mark my words, if we cannot win here or do not win here, it will get
it goes
worse.
To Ohio, it goes to Pennsylvania, it goes to all the other free states in the country,
right,
where you're free to have to associate, to free to collectively bargain. You know, it's all, we're all in the shark tank.
Well, right, I'm talking about years to come. Without a union going to the table bargaining and negotiating for your wages, our wages aren't set so high that they don't turn a profit. I mean, we have union contractors make plenty of money. You know, these guys are making money. But in years to come, do you think they'll continue to give you a raise every year? Do you think they're going to walk up and say, you know what, Bob, you can have $5 more an hour. Yeah. Here you go. Have another week of vacation. How about maternity leave? You know, without unions, we wouldn't have maternity leave. We would still have child labor.
Well, you look at the woman in Missouri who wants to go back to that. The state senator who introduced a bill wanting to take away child labor restrictions in Missouri. So, hey, you know, kids under 16 who the hotel wants to give them a room, they can work there year-round. I guess I'm the only one who sees the problem with having children having their own hotel room, and just me.
yeah, I'm with you on that one.
Yeah, it's kind of strange.
Yeah.
Let's move back to this in the work that you're doing, streaming this event. You've got to have some really great stories of the people that you've met here, having been here as long as you have.
Yeah, my one real great story, and I got to give him props, is my tech guy right now. I called him up on Wednesday. He said he couldn't make it until his unemployment check came. He does have a wife, he has a home, and he has children, and he used his unemployment check to buy an airline ticket to come here to help me stream this video for everyone to see. And you know what? Walker wants to say it's about money. This man hasn't asked for a dime, not a dime. So, I mean, that to me, that's a miraculous story for somebody to give unconditionally on a whim. I mean, I called him, and it, bam, he's here. The word's gotten out. Union Made PC found out that we're using our own equipment, and we don't have – it's decent equipment, but it's not the best. It's what a working man can afford.
Right.
You know, it's a webcam. Anybody can buy a decent mixing board and a laptop or running. They're currently coming here from Ann Arbor, Michigan, driving through a snowstorm with laptops, a desktop, 1080p cameras, all to help us, not asking for a dime. The owner of that company said we have his tech guys as long as we want. He's putting them up in a hotel. I mean, and this is a business owner now, you know, so I mean.
Well, because I think business owners, I think they realize. I walk up and down the streets here in Madison, and a lot of the small business owners, not the Halliburtons, not, you know, the Wall Street people, but the small Main Street business people, they've got signs in their windows, almost all of them. We support the teachers. We support the right of workers to collectively bargain, because I think they understand that money that Walker wants to steal from the workers, those wages that want to be stolen, that's Main Street's money. That's the money those workers used to spend in those shops.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And everybody knows that when the union trades come into town, we stimulate a city's economy. When we come and we build your power plants and your hotels and your casinos and your commercial businesses, we stay there and we spend the money locally. The union promotes American-made products. I mean, we constantly promote buying our own goods and services to keep the money in our own economy.
And that's vitally important. Where can we see the video stream? What's the address?
It's on ustream.tv. Our show's called Ask the People. You can also type in keyword Wisconsin. It'll pop up. You'll see the rally. We've interviewed Tammy Baldwin now. Hopefully we'll get SEIU president. Hopefully we'll get the IBEW president at Hill tomorrow. And there should be a few other speakers, and it's live, unedited. You see exactly what we do. I don't ask too many questions of people on the show. And what I tell them is I say, I want you to speak the truth. I don't want to, ask you specific questions and guide you in any one direction to tell my story. I want you to get on that mic and tell your story.
Absolutely. We'll get a link at our site at thericksmithshow.com. Just click on Mark Routon's name, and we'll put it right there just so you can take a look at it, because this is important. Mark, I appreciate the work you do. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
We're going to take a quick break. We're right back after this. This is The Rick Smith Show. We're working people.
I will be to the last of us, fight till we die, to the kings of the kingdom on high. All stand together for the world to see. Now the time is right to live out all our dreams. Say the words forever.
working people come to talk.
You are listening to the best of the Rick Smith Show. Tonight's program is a look back 3 years ago today as the assaults in Wisconsin ramped up and it became apparent that workers' rights were under attack. This program is an important look back because it shows us how we got to where we are today. If you have any thoughts, any questions, any comments, we'd love to hear it. You can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Thanks for tuning in.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make history happen!
Your proud defender of the American dream, Rick Smith.
Come on.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. That's the big question, you know. Which side of this do you fall on? Are you on the side of Walker and big business? Are you on the side of the citizens who are in the streets, the people who are braving the cold and bitter, the bitter temperatures here in Wisconsin? After all, it is February in Wisconsin, but that has not at all dampened the spirit. That has not at all really it's just amazing stuff. Big, major breaking story, major breaking news right now. The South Central Federation of Labor here in Wisconsin, their council has endorsed a general strike. They're saying possibly for the day that Walker signs this so-called budget repair bill. They're right now instructing their education committee to immediately begin educating their affiliates and their members to say, hey, you know what? What are we going to do when this happens? How are we going to roll this out? What's the messaging? And the messaging is, look, back when Reagan fired the Patco workers, there wasn't an organized pushback. There wasn't a massive protest. This has to be met with force. This has to be met with not violence, force. This has to be met with people getting into the streets and working people saying, you know what? We're going to stop. And I think that this is it's a bold move. But it's the right move, Jake. It's absolutely the right move.
I think a lot of us, how many times have we talked about Ronald Reagan, the Patco strike? And how many times have we said, you know, we sat back and we did nothing. And we should have called a national strike. And I do believe to this day, I truly believe that the business community would have put so much pressure on Ronald Reagan that he would call off the dogs. I truly believe that.
And that's what has to happen at the end of this. And we've seen it walking up and down the streets here of Madison. We've seen the small business owners, the small people who have their shops on Main Street, the folks here who have, you know, it's their name on the door. It's their family business. You know, not the generic, you know, oh, it's a small business with a couple $100 million in revenue. No, these are people who are just making it, who are fighting the fight every day to provide for their families. They're the ones standing with these workers because they understand that, you know, when they have a better life, so will these small businesses. And I think this is a great move. It's the right thing to do, and it's what we've been calling for this whole time. At some point, it's going to come to a head. And while, you know, the citizens in the Capitol, everything has been, you know, pretty smooth. Everything has gone, the right way, as I would say. At some point, Walker's going to clamp down. And it's what comes out of that. Eventually, he's going to sign this bill. Eventually, this is going to become law. It's what then happens.
And I give these folks at the South Central Federation of Labor the utmost credit. Mm-hmm. Now it's the action phase. If Walker gets to sign this bill, you need to be in the streets. And again, I think it's just not here in Wisconsin. It's got to be in Ohio. It's got to be in Pennsylvania. It's got to be in Indiana and in Michigan and Missouri and New Hampshire and Tennessee and Alabama. People across this country have got to get out in the streets. And this could be that moment. This could be that catalyst, that moment in history. That moment where people go, that was it. That was the spark that turned the country around. It was that moment where working people finally picked their head up and said, oh, yeah, there is something beyond the treadmill that I'm running on. There is something beyond this paycheck-to-paycheck pattern that we've become accustomed to. And I'm hoping, I know it's probably not going to happen, but at some point I'm hoping that our Tea Party friends, I'm hoping that they come along. Now understand, the moneyed interests want us divided. The big moneyed interests want us divided. The Americans for Prosperity. You remember those crazy people who came to Harrisburg with their voting booth where they wouldn't let anyone vote? Well, they shipped in a couple hundred of crazy people here to Madison. And what happened? Nothing. They couldn't drum up the kind of the trouble that they wanted. They couldn't get the gotcha moment, even though they tried to fabricate. And we're seeing reports now that they were trying to get a hold of SEIU T-shirts so that they could say, you know, just say really dumb things or cause some kind of trouble. And this guy who used to be in charge of the Tea Party Nation, you know, the former chairman of the Tea Party Express, you know, a guy who resigned under the dark cloud of racial comments under the what's the word I'm looking for here? Under the, you know, one of the, another one of these guys who, oh, well, you know, I didn't mean it that way, but you still said it. And the reality is he thought it was a great idea for people to go out there and impersonate an SEIU organizer and make up this scenario, because it's all about the message. And if the message that they can put out there is, well, these are union thugs, the message that they can put out there is that, you know, these are goons who are out there, you know, causing trouble. Instead of what this really is, and I'm telling you firsthand, these are families, these are women and their children, mm-hmm. These are college kids, these are high school kids. That's what this is. This bizarre thought that, well, you know, you got a bunch of people there with bats and, you know, a bunch of big, bulky goons walking around. Just not it, man. This is one of the most family atmospheres I've ever seen, and this is supposed to be a protest. That's what's amazing to me, the number of families. My wife would be so proud. There was one woman that we saw last night who very discreetly was breastfeeding her baby. So my wife would be proud of that. But there she is being part of this event. These are the people who are here. None of the stereotypical folks that the right wants you to believe. And this isn't about what they keep pushing us towards. Every article I read, it's about the money. Oh, they want to take our money. They're greedy. No, these are people who want to keep their rights, man. And it's that simple. It's that simple.
You know what I think, if I can a second, Rick, you go back to this call for a general strike. And I think about who to affect. The businesses in this country, in this state, will be affected. And that tends to be not always a constituency of the Republican Party, but those Republicans that are going to have to cast that vote, that lets them know, look, the real issues now are you willing? Are you willing to force this state into a general strike and hurt the economy, and hurt the businesses of this state? You're saying to them, are you willing to pay that price? And that's what's going to have to happen, because it's obvious the governor isn't going to change his mind. He said that repeatedly.
He's come right out and said, nope, we're doing it. We've got the votes. We're going to ram it down your throat, like it or not.
And by all accounts, all they have to do is change one. And I think we can do it.
Well, they need to change three votes.
They have two. That's what I meant. They already have two.
Well, there's talk that they have two.
I'm assuming that they do. I don't believe that the people who said they think they have it would be lying at this point.
If you want to comment on this, you can go to our Facebook page at the Rick Smith Show Facebook page. Where working people come to talk, or our website, therichsmithshow.com, and you can comment on the story that's there. This is exciting news. This is really exciting stuff. And to be honest, you know, being here, almost every person that I've run into, Jake, looks at the 14 Democrats who've said, you know what, we're not going to stay here and be your puppets. We're not going to be your stooge. We're not going to stand here while you stick it to, you know, tens of thousands of working people. They left. And they said, you know what, we're not going to be a part of this. And with them, as you've pointed out, they took that 20th vote that they needed to have a quorum, even though the Republicans only needed 15 of them. You still need 20 to have the quorum. And one of the Democrats, his name's John Erpenbach, he told the AP that today that he's worried the Republicans are now going to take this opportunity and really just ram through a bunch of other bills that they've been looking for, because evidently here how the rules are, you don't need to have the quorum to vote on other bills. This is only for spending bills you needed to have this number. So what they're worried about is you're going to see a bunch of other really, really toxic legislation come back. And here's the reality. The Democrats can't stop that either. So I'm of the mindset, let them go as far to the extreme as they want. Let them be as crazy as they want to be. Show us what you're made of. Show us just how nuts and just how far to the extreme that you are. Show us. Because I think the rest of the country will take notice, and I think the rest of the country is going to have an epiphany moment. This awakening of just how bad they want to stick it to us.
And maybe what is happening here is going to set the standard. I mean, how many times have you and I talked about how disappointed we are with some of the Democrats in Congress since Obama came to power and the Democrats had control prior to this last election? Well, here you have the Democrats coming in, riding the white horse and saving the day. You know, God bless them. This is one time where the Democrats really were the party of the people.
14 united Democrats. To me, that is just amazing. Just amazing stuff. And you know, the folks that you talk to here, the young people who are here, an amazing, amazing time. And, you know, to a member, to a citizen, every one of them love this area. Every one of them want to stay here. I mean, just like the folks we talked to back in Pennsylvania, they're afraid that they're going to have this massive brain drain, that young people are going to leave the state, and you're going to have a problem. And when we come back, I want to talk to Mitchell Ost. He's a teacher in the area. His story is pretty interesting in that he fought for this job. This is his first year. You know, the reality is, he fought for this job. This is the job he wanted in his hometown. And if you take the right of collective bargaining away from him, the right and the ability to feed his family, what's that going to mean to the school district? So we're going to take a quick break. Right back with Mitchell Ost. Stick around. We're right back after this. This is The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.
You are listening to the best of The Rick Smith Show. Tonight's program is a look back 3 years ago today as the assaults in Wisconsin ramped up and it became apparent that workers' rights were under attack. Thanks for tuning in.
The steel strike of 1919 was called the Hunky Strike because most of the workers were either first or second generation immigrants from Eastern and Central Europe. Up until the end of World War I, workers had benefited from shorter hours, better pay, and the promise of union recognition. Once the war came to an end, the mill owners pursued anti-union open shop policies and other cost-cutting measures. During the strike, there was near total suppression of all civil liberties. Major work issues included the 12-hour day, the 7-day work week, scores of workers being injured and maimed, union recognition, and poverty wages. Mary Harris, better known as Mother Jones, fought tirelessly throughout her life for social justice and human rights as a labor leader and a worker advocate. On August 20th, while visiting striking miners in Homestead, Pennsylvania, home of U.S. Steel's famous Homestead Steelworks, she defied injunctions against public gatherings and addressed 5,000 striking workers and their families. This speech led to her being arrested and jailed for giving an unauthorized speech. When brought before the judge, she was asked who had signed a permit to speak at a public gathering. She answered, Patrick Henry, Thomas Jefferson, and John Adams. As the strike went on, Mother Jones, the grandmother of all agitators, gave many speeches to rally the workers. One speech in Chicago was described by a spy for the U.S. War Department's Military Intelligence Division as the foulest and most profane that can be imagined, teeming with ultra-radical suggestions. Welcoming the spies, she would invite them to the front of the crowd so they could report her words accurately. This Rick Smith Show Labor History Moment was made possible by Grantham Labor Education Center at IUP. For more information, visit www.therickSmithShow.com.
The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. We are here in the capital of Wisconsin, Madison, sitting in one of the Senate office buildings, one of the hearing rooms, here as the protest outside continues, rages on, as the voice of democracy continues in the capital. And the reason we're here is, folks, this is coming home. This is the kind of stuff we're going to have to do. This is the kind of stuff that we're going to have to come up with to fight back against this right-wing anti-worker, anti-teacher, anti-education agenda. I'm sitting here with Mitchell Ost. He's a teacher and former negotiator with the WEA. Mitchell, I appreciate you coming and taking time for me.
I appreciate being here. Thank you.
You know, when you see what's going on here, it's got to make you, A, proud of the people of Wisconsin, and B, excited that people get it.
Well, one of the things that I am really proud of is that our union brothers and sisters have come together, because I think this is clearly an assault on collective bargaining and on unions. And it's really an assault on the middle class, because the standard of wages and benefits gets set by the unions. When the union jobs get eroded, then the standard is going to be brought down as well. So this is really assault on all of the middle class.
Yep, I absolutely agree. And you know what I find interesting? The symbolism of choosing a state like Wisconsin to be the battleground, the first, you know, the first state to really go after this agenda, the front line, if you will, given Wisconsin's very proud, very historic history, you know, background with labor rights, being the first state to allow public workers to collectively bargain, being the first state for workmen's compensation, very worker-friendly history here.
Well, we have been a progressive state, and our motto is forward. And this certainly doesn't seem like we're moving forward.
That was a major step backwards, in my opinion. When you're talking about calling out the National Guard?
It's really, there's no attempt here to be reasonable. This is definitely union bashing. The whole attempt here is to undermine the ability of workers to negotiate. Initially, Governor Walker came out talking about how it's the money. It's trying to balance a budget. Well, it's not the money. The unions have already agreed that we will make major concessions to help reach the numbers that the governor's talking about in order to balance the budget. What we will not negotiate is our rights. Our right to bargain is something that we are not willing to give up.
Yeah, I mean, right from the beginning when this started, I said, you know, this is absolutely the wrong way to go about it. If your true intentions was the budget, even given the fact that, you know, they gave some $140 million away in tax breaks to corporations, and now want the public teachers and the public sector workers to make that up above and beyond, just to me makes, well, it makes sense from their ideology, but from a standpoint of governing, no sense at all.
It's pretty clear to me that the attempt is to create a non-union state, and we've historically been a union state. And a long time ago, we gave up many rights in order to get collective bargaining. In fact, we gave up the right to strike. Public teachers cannot strike in the state of Wisconsin. But we were given, in return, an arbitration process, that would force both sides to come to the bargaining table and truly negotiate. Because if you came to the table with a offer that was out of line, the arbitrator is going to rule against you,
right,
and you're going to lose. So both sides are forced to make some kind of a compromise. And the idea that we haven't compromised is ludicrous. We have bargained, which means we have compromised. And what's even worse is that in 1993, the Republicans took over, and they imposed on public teachers a special law that limited bargaining. We've been operating under this law, which people in Wisconsin would all know as QEO. It's Qualified Economic Offer. If the districts made an offer that was at least 3.2%, they could impose it. Well, we've been operating under that since 1993, and people have been saying 3.2%, that sounds like a lot of money. But that was the whole package.
Right.
That means benefits. So the reality is there have been a number of years that we actually took pay cuts in order to preserve our benefits.
And that's something, you know, it's good you brought that up, because that's something that most people, for some bizarre reason, don't seem to get, that the health care that you folks receive and the pensions you receive are deferred. It's deferred wages. That was money in your pocket that you gave up and said, no, we want these things, the health care, we want pension, and we're going to invest in those by taking some money out of our right now paychecks.
We have been offered several times more money in salary, but less in terms of health benefits. And we have said we would rather have the health benefits than the salary. Now we're being told not only are our salaries
too high, now you've got Cadillac health care and
exactly,
you've got these generous pension plans, which, you know, I find amazing, because most people that I know who have retired from state work or from school, from being a teacher, you know, they make like 24 grand a year on pension, which to me, I don't know, that's all that extravagant. But I look at our CEO class, and I look at the golden parachutes that come out of Wall Street, and I go, help me here, because I'm not seeing the hundreds of millions of dollars that someone like Jack Welch gets, being in the same ballpark that my friend who's a teacher who gets $24,000 gets.
Well,
not seeing it.
But what's even scarier is the middle class is being pitted against itself.
Absolutely.
I don't understand it. It's almost like a jealousy of somebody has something I don't have. And the reality is they should be thinking of, this is now the standard. We should all be getting this kind of benefits. We all should be getting pensions. But if you've been looking at what's happened in the public sector, they have all been eroded. You know, there are promises made, and they don't keep them. My son is an engineer, and he's not in a union. And this year, his company decided that they're not going to match his 401k because they're in financial trouble. They have no pension. They were sold the concept of a 401k as a way of saving for your own retirement.
Right.
And then they said, and we'll match it. Well, now, what is this company contributing towards their employees' pensions?
Nothing.
There's nothing. And
that's all. But, you know, this is the argument I get from a lot of people who say, well, I don't have it. You know, the company I work for, they froze our pensions. They cut our pay. Why shouldn't they have to suffer like me? And again, you know, as you pointed out earlier, this concept of tearing somebody else down to me is foreign. I want to build. I'd be asking, why don't I get the things that they get, and how do I get them? You know, it's easy to tear a house down. You know, I look at people like Scott Walker as a, you know, the one the one carpenter who the only tool he owns is a hammer, because he can't build a house, he can only tear them down. Well, and that's what I see here.
The whole concept here has been polarizing and divisive. There is no attempt here to show leadership to bring people together and resolve something. It's truly an attack. It's bullying. It's an attempt to dictate what the conditions of labor will be, not to negotiate the conditions of labor.
And that's the important part that I think folks need to realize. As you've pointed out, look, you have binding arbitration here. The state should be bound to negotiate as well. Do you think there's an argument to be made there that you know they're trying to usurp the agreement you already have to bargaining?
Well, that's my personal feeling. Unfortunately, the state legislature has the ability to change to re-legislate what the contract is, and.
I wish I could get a contract like that.
Yeah,
I could change it at any time. I wish my mortgage company would let me change my terms whenever I wanted.
And that's really unfortunate because it takes away any sense of fairness, any sense of security or understanding where things are going to be in the future, because it could be changed at any moment. And a lot of people in the private sector says, well, that's what we have to deal with. But is that really what people want their life to be, you know, where it's controlled and can be changed at any moment without honoring past agreements?
Well, Pennsylvania is an at-will state, and I keep telling people, if you don't have a union contract, you can come to work tomorrow, and they say, well, you're no longer, we have no more will for you. There's the door.
And that's one of the things that has brought me here, is to be able to fight for due process, for protections. As a negotiator, I had often represented teachers that had gotten themselves into some trouble. And there was a process.
A minute. No, come on, Mitchell. Come on. Everyone knows you can't fire a bad teacher.
Well,
can't do it.
That's just not true. If a teacher has failed in some way to meet the standards of the school, they can be put on a probation. Then the process, if they do not show improvement, they can eventually be terminated.
But the thing is you got to have administrators who actually follow the rules, and you can't have a dictatorship. My response to people who say that you can't fire a bad teacher is you can't in districts that have lazy administrators. There's due process, and I don't want anyone fired nilly-willy, but the people who are not making the grade, those are the folks that eventually you move where they're capable.
Well, if there's no due process, people are going to be let go for reasons that are beyond their own control. I mean, you could let somebody go because they're too expensive. You decide you're going to get rid of the more expensive people with masters.
The older people.
Or the older people.
And because they're the ones who've got the longest time and the bigger paychecks. Where do you see this going? Last question I have for you. Where do you see this going from today forward? Because honestly and truthfully, time is on the side of the governor and the Republicans who want to steal your rights away. Where does this go, you think?
Well, I'm hoping that it becomes a national issue, not a local issue. And that's why I'm very happy to be here, because people in other parts of the country have to understand that if it happens here, it can happen anywhere.
That's why we're here, because I do see if things go south here and you folks are saddled with this theft, that Pennsylvania is next. Mitchell Ost, I appreciate your time and keep up the fight and keep up the great work.
Thank you for having me.
All righty, we're going to take a quick break. Right back after this.
Working man like me, I ain't never been on welfare. That's one place I won't be. I'll be working as long as my two hands are fit to use. I'll drink my beer in a tavern, sing a little bit of these working men.
Proudly blue in an ocean of red, Rick Smith.
You are listening to the best of the Rick Smith Show.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. The Rick Smith Show.
The Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. If you want to contact us, email rick@thericksmithshow.com. Boy, big news coming out of the South Central Labor Federation here in Wisconsin. This idea of a general strike if Scott Walker signs this bill, and they're saying when he signs it, a general strike. I think it's a great thing. Again, it's going to take the stones to do this, but when you start hitting big business in the wallet, they're going to turn around, they're going to come around, and I think this is a great start. I got an email during the break from someone who lives here in Wisconsin. I said, hey, why don't you come down, see us? We wrote over at Facebook. He said, no, my house is about 68 miles away. My car's car trouble. I'm going to have to wait till my next check, he writes, so I can get another car. And he points out that, had it been the 1950s, from where he lives to Madison, he could have taken a train, which is kind of interesting, because as you know, this governor hates public transportation, wants to kill, the train, that, they proposed, last year along with John Kasich in Ohio. You go through this and you go, really, public transportation creates jobs. The whole building things creates jobs. But back to this idea of a strike, there have been some major strikes throughout our nation's history that, you don't learn about in school. You think about back in 1919 in Seattle, you had 65,000 workers take to the streets to protest the conditions of that day. In 1934, you had two major strikes, one in San Francisco by the longshoremen and one in Minneapolis by the Teamsters, who said, you know what, we've had enough. We want to be treated decent. We want to make a reasonable living. That to me, we are reliving those moments. I think back to when we were on strike, when I was on strike back in 1994, with the Teamsters, company wanted a whole bunch of really, really, really destructive things that were going to kill the standards of living of the workers, and they came together. I see this here, the same kind of thing. You've got these working people who, for all intent and purposes, all they want to do is do their jobs, make a decent living, and be productive members of society. And you've got Governor Walker here who thinks, well, we want to run our government like they're able to in the private sector, which means that we can fire anybody we want, whenever we want, and we can put our own buddies in, we can put our cronies in. Like the good old days, the patronage days, where the governor and the party boss decides who gets that prime job. The party loyalists are the ones who get the jobs in government, not the most qualified people, the party people, the loyalists. And then when the new party takes over, all those people lose their jobs, in come new party loyalists. And who loses in that scenario? We, the taxpayers, you and me. I've said it a number of times. I want boring bureaucrats working for state government. I want people who are non-ideological. I want people who their job is what their job is. They're trained, they're qualified, they're professional, and that's their job. That's what I want. I don't want this to end up being our services are based on the political winds.
And up until the 70s in Pennsylvania, it was like that. Every time a Republican took over from a Democrat from a Republican, every employee on the Hill. I mean, think about that. Oh, but it gets worse. Not only was every employee replaced, they were replaced by people who got those jobs just because they were loyal to one party as opposed to the other. And what does that mean? It means that, there was quite a few of them that just weren't qualified. Whereas now you have a workforce that's qualified, well-trained, and it provides basic services for the people of Pennsylvania. A much better system. But But because of political ideology, there's governors all over this country that want to eliminate the rights of public employees to have bargaining rights.
Yeah, I think it's just, you know, such an appropriate communication Joshua here in Wisconsin put on our Facebook about this governor hating public transportation. I mean, I'm just amazed at how in such a short period of time this guy has made so many really bad decisions. I mean, I can't even say that about our governor in Pennsylvania, Tom Corporate. I just can't say it. He hasn't done anything, not this drastic, not destroy a building project that would have created tens of thousands of jobs and put this state on the 21st century infrastructure track. No, Corporate hasn't done that. He's not trying just yet to steal the rights away from people by using a strong-arm government tactic. This is where the T-Twizzlers should be. They should be standing up against tyrannical government.
Well, before you give the governor a pass, you and I both know, and this is what's scary, Rick, the party in power. And just like here in Wisconsin, in Pennsylvania, you have the governor and both legislatures controlled by the Republicans. We have in Pennsylvania, we have radical right-wingers in control. And therein lies the problem. I think you are correct. I think inherently, if the governor had total control of the situation, which he doesn't, I think he would moderate on some of those positions. But given the state of politics among his own leadership, they're going to push him to do things which, in the end, I don't think he might in any other time not want to do.
Well, we'll see.
And that's what's
we'll
scary.
That
that's what's scary.
For me, this what's going on here in Madison, I think this is going to dictate a lot of what happens in Pennsylvania in a couple of months. I think if Walker pays a political price, which if you're looking, you know, a guy that was just elected, just took office, they're saying mid to high 30s with his approval rating, and as this drags on and gets more attention, or maybe he does something even dumber than saying he's going to call the National Guard out, like, oh, I don't know, maybe actually calling out the National Guard and something escalating, I see those numbers tanking even further.
And I think the Democrats and labor in this state need to go after every single Republican who refuses to listen. You want to go through with this? You want to do this radical right-wing stuff? Okay, we're gonna put petitions up, try to get you recalled. You make it as painful as possible for them to learn a lesson they will never forget.
Right. Here a little earlier we said the internet had been turned off. Evidently it is now back up for some. We haven't got an official report that everything is back up. But like I said, you know, this is that beginning of breaking this down. It's going to be interesting to see as this week goes along, what decisions does this governor make? Because right now, people have the ability to sleep in the rotunda. They're in the Capitol. They've got their inflatable mattresses. They've got their sleeping bags. They've got their families. You know, there are families actually camping in the state capitol. I think it's an amazing thing. But what's going to happen when this governor decides get them out? And the police have to get them out, because as was stated here earlier, the head of the police union said, you know what, we're going to have to do what we have to do. You may not like it, but you're going to have to do it. And if they have to don the riot gear and do all that, that's what they're going to do. So anyway, we're going to be here for the next couple of days. If you want to email me, tell me what you thought of tonight's program, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Hopefully tomorrow we'll have the phones up and running to take your calls. But for tonight, I thought it was a good show. I thought it was a little bit of the flavor of what's going on here. But we're going to be here for the next couple of days. I hope you enjoy the coverage. And really, for me, this is about a couple of months from now, showing you how to do it. We will see you tomorrow night.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email rick@therickSmithShow.com or interact with us anytime at therickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tide and flood beneath the sway.